Having recorded this podcast a couple days ago, we're put in the odd position of posting it on a day where terrible crap has happened in Boston, obviously, and Iraq, and probably other places in the world, because everything's crazy at the moment. And we'd like to put out front, since society's memory is so short, I would like to have it recorded, that myself and the other guys on the crew, who couldn't be with me for this recording because when I edit it, express our deepest and most heartfelt condolences to any of those who were affected by the tragic events, or people who know those who were affected by them, and to thank people who work in medical services, public service, and defense for the work they do every day and had to do all the more harder today, as well as the random acts of kindness committed by the average man. We thank those people for that as well. That's just that kind of stuff that keeps the world moving in times like this. But in the end, if we don't keep having fun, then what the hell is this worth? So we are posting the podcast today, goddammit, no matter what. So have fun. And thanks for listening. Cheers. Welcome to the Scotchcast, the Giant Community's off-topic podcast, I guess, one of them for the week of April 13th. I'm your host, Dark Professor Cynic, and joining me today is Darbleton.
What are we off-topic from? We're always off-topic.
I guess. Last week was a Guild Wars show, but when I counted it, we did literally half the show was Bioshock Infinite and everything else. Noobarama is also joining me this week.
How can you say you love her if you can't even eat her poop?
And also Mr. Squiddle. Squiddles? What's the...
Squiddle. Hello.
And you saw him on the live show with Shinboy a couple weeks ago.
If you want to remember, I'm the one in the pirate outfit with the awesome hat.
Are you wearing a pirate outfit today?
No, not this evening. But I do have the hat, but okay. I don't do much good. So
of the pirate outfit, the hat has made its way into your casual attire.
Yeah, it actually sits on a shelf right next to me. So whenever I feel like being piratey, throw it on and I get my yard going.
Is that a case where you wear nothing but the hat, or is it do you just?
It could be depending on the situation.
Have you had a request yet?
No request. So ladies, if you want me to, just ask and it shall be done.
He's open to anything. All you have to do is ask. That's the thing. He has low standards, so doesn't really need a special occasion. Just ask him. He's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Wait, what exactly happened that you guys are discussing?
He just has a pirate outfit and he has a pirate hat and he wears a pirate hat naked for women. That's all we're saying. That's all I'm saying.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the bathroom.
He better not be leaving. Are you still there? God damn it.
Yeah, what?
Okay.
Sorry.
How was your week, Noobarama? What's you up to?
Real quick, I'm back. Pardon?
What's you up to? How's your week?
I'm not prepared for this question. Pass.
We do this every week. It's not like I spring this question on you.
I need to form this up in a cohesive statement.
He's just so shell-shocked and just traumatized by the events of the week. He cannot mentally answer all the amazing things that have happened to him. It's been a jam-packed week in terms of games coming out and just culture in general.
Uh-huh. Wait, yep. Has there been any good games out this week?
No.
One's coming out in 3 days. One of biggest expansion releases this year.
Guacamelee is decent. I won't be getting it just because it's PlayStation and whatnot, but it's tip of the hat to that.
No, I'm not.
There was Evil Land. I mean, did that come out this week? I'm not sure.
That actually looked really cool. Actually looks legitimately cool.
That's the one that pays homage to the old style RPGs and all. Yeah, right.
RPG history, yeah. It starts off in You can only move to four directions, and it's black and white, and it's all flat. And then you slowly pick up. You literally pick up advancements in RPG history, which is kind of cool. All
right, so no one talked. How did no one mention the big release coming out this week?
What are you talking about?
The biggest release this year,
which is
for video. Darkest. Wait, Heart of Darkness.
Stark?
Victoria 2 expansion.
Oh, okay, sure.
No?
Oh, no, I did enjoy that Amnesia Machine for Pigs is currently on the Giant Bomb coming out this week because it's slated for Q2 of 2013.
I can't play an Amnesia game. They rock my shit. I can't.
I actually have a ton of coworkers who, like, they are not gamers, but I'm always just like, they either want to get scared and go to the horror films, or they believe that, like, they stand to the, like, you know, I do not get scared at these things. Like, I want you to play Amnesia.
Yeah.
Because that will test you.
What's the controls like? Is it accessible? I don't know. Because I've only seen videos, and even those terrify me, so I've never picked it up. But, like, I don't know. Because when it comes to introducing other people to games, the biggest thing I find for them is usually the controls. Because they have, like,
the controls are simple enough. The way it's displayed with the UI is not the most, like, easiest to get into, I think.
How about this? Could they boil it down to an iPad game?
Well, yes, but I almost don't want them to.
I kind
of... Because that's too small of a screen, I think. Because
I've been tossing up buying... And this is, by the way, all in service of completely overriding the Victoria 2 expansion. I've been in the process of... I might buy Year Walk, which is that iPad game Patrick Lepik and Brad played on Giant Bomb, which looks kind of freaky. It's just like
it looks like a really good, like a very solid take on like that whole genre, but with iPads.
Yeah, exactly. And if
like great application of that specific platform.
If they're right and it works for them, then it could totally work. Because like, obviously, there's the iPad gamer who plays iPad games on the BART or whatever. I'm trying to relate this to Americans.
The fuck is the part? Not everyone lives in San Francisco.
You mean public transportation?
Public transportation.
Public transportation.
The bus.
Yeah, the bus or train. Yeah, thank you.
The lorry.
And it would never work there, I don't think. Like, it doesn't matter what. Yeah, like I know I usually rock around big ass headphones when I go around in public transport anyway. But even then, I wouldn't consider. What?
Use earphones. Why would you headphones? You use headphones
because they sound better.
Wait, do you use those fucking weird wooden looking headphones that you use?
No, they're too big. Okay. There's a line and they cross the
okay, there's a line.
There is a line.
I mean, yeah. I just want to state, I mean, when it comes to iPad, iPhone, phone games, any game like that,
yeah,
the ambiance of the audio is what really makes a game,
yeah,
in those systems, I feel, aside from the screen. The screen's too small.
Yeah.
Play a lot of things. So exactly. If the music's great, you have a winner if it does really good ambiance.
Yeah, and
wait. So do you guys play iPhone, iPad, Android?
I do.
Yeah, I do.
I do.
Totally.
Oh, see, I like.
I play Space Team, but that's pretty much like that's about it.
So like the bus is really the only place I can have time to read. So that's I listen to music and read on the bus. So
what are you talking about? You sit on Mumble talking about random shit with random people on the internet for hours a day.
Yeah, but the reading and talking on Mumble about furries and ponies, which I will get into later, I promise. Uh-huh. They're mutually exclusive subjects. Uh-huh. Like you can't. I can barely appreciate music and read at the same time because.
Well, just, yeah, I'm saying, you know, divvy up your day.
I don't have a vagina. Different. There you go.
Like in the pie graph of your day, currently about a third of it is devoted to doing nonsense on the internet. I'm just saying,
that's,
you know,
not
like,
true.
Half that and like. Redistribute that to other stuff that can enrich your life in other ways, you know?
What, phone games? What?
Well, yeah, different experiences. Have you played an iPad? Well, you don't have an iPad, but I assume there's decent games on Android. I don't put game on my Galaxy Nexus. I game on my
iPad.
I didn't
like... I my phone has fucking shit battery life, right. So if I want to get through the day, because I use my phone a lot, I can't play games.
Because... Well, yeah, like, so... All right. Where do you? Okay. There's a fork in the road in front of us. One side of it is to talk more about iPad games, and the other side is to let Noob continue what he's been doing this week. Which way do you guys want to go?
I will say a little bit on the iPad games, which.
All right, done.
Who was the British guy on the, like, the, I think it was the GDC Part 2?
Richard Garriott.
Paul Bonnet.
I wanted to say that, but I wasn't sure.
It's Paul Bonnet. Richard Garriott. They didn't have Richard Garriott.
I'm glad I didn't say that.
If he made a mobile game,
he could only play it in space. He's a chauffeur,
Anyway, what he was talking about seemed really interesting in that, they gave their sound department double the normal funding.
Right.
So they were able to pull so much more stuff.
Yeah.
But then, pushing people to actually use the headphones.
Absolutely.
By just something as simple as an achievement, but it's the idea of actually we're making sound an important element on this.
Yeah. And as it's becoming a bigger and bigger thing. Like, I know that ever since consoles have been able to do 7.1 sounds, like even the freaking Vita can do like something stupid. I think it has the capability of doing 5.1 of HDMI or some shit like that. Which you have to get like a specific dongle for, is my understanding. But ever since then, like, people have forgotten how important and integral sound design is. It's as if the 8-bit and 16-bit days, the simplicity of those tracks and the repetitiveness of those tracks embedded them in people's minds. And the more complex stuff today has essentially washed past people. And a lot of people don't respect like the amount sound design can add to games.
What's the game? So I haven't played this on my phone, but it is. I know it is on Android and iOS. It's Sound and Sorcery or Sword and Sorcery.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's one of like the best examples of an amazing soundtrack, great ambient sound.
Mm-hmm.
And
I talked about that 2-3 months ago.
Yeah.
Like it's a very fun game. It is annoyingly challenging at sometimes, but it's a good walkthrough.
And like
it's fun.
Let's see, a game I played on my iPad, not recently, but like my favorite experience on the iPad was freaking Phoenix Wright. The original Phoenix Wright. I just got the iPad version, played through it again, and I freaking love that game. And obviously, we're still talking about like bitty, like forced 8-bit. I bet they could do better than that, but it was essentially not 8, but 16-bit like equivalent music tracks to that, and it sounds great. It's so engrossing. Like shouting objection in the middle of a courtroom with that music behind it made me feel something.
Do you actually shout objection into your microphone?
Yeah, I think that's why people got so excited about it.
Yeah.
Was just getting that interaction. Squiddle,
yeah.
Have you ever played Audio Surf?
I love Audio Surf.
I have not.
No. If a lot of the listeners are like PC enthusiasts, they might like this game. It was just a quick thing that you can get on Steam, and actually when you get the Half-Life 2 soundtrack, which it's pretty good.
It's all right.
But it's a fun game to play when you have like a couple friends over and you're just killing time. In that it's like you pick a song off your desktop, or any library you have, you just search for it, and it makes a track based off that music.
I definitely have some songs I like to throw at this and see if it could actually.
And like what's super fun is like if it gets like more picked up or heated parts of the song, you'll go faster downhill and then slower is more like relaxing.
Yeah.
And it's just fun to like have like, okay, now you sit down and play this while we talk.
Think of it as like Guitar Hero mixed with a track racer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like if you Guitar Hero, I think used to have the thing where you jump, if you dump in a MIDI soundtrack, it'll break out the notes for it. This kind of does the same thing, but with auto analysis on music. It's pretty cool. It's been around for a long time, so I bet a bunch of our audience has heard of it, but yeah, it's definitely something to check out.
It's like $10. It's definitely something you can wait until the Steam summer sale and definitely pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the issues I have with audio on, and I guess we're still talking about audio on mobile platforms, possibly, is that I listen to music while I'm at my desk, either on my iPhone or my computer, but when I'm wandering about and I'm walking around, or I have a hard time even at home just sitting down, putting headphones on to get the real experience of a game and listen to it. As much as I feel that music is definitely the fourth person in the room when it comes to games that needs to be there, really needs to be more accentuated. I have a hard time just sitting there. I'm going to put my headphones on and play this game on a device. Like on my computer right now, headphones are perfect for what I do.
Yeah.
But like on the couch where I would be out and about just sitting there, I can't do it. I don't know why. Maybe it's just a block for me, but
I think a lot of people have the same problem. Like, I am part of the minority who would sit on my couch with an iPad and focus down an iPad game. Like, a lot of people...
Yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah.
If, like, I have a computer that I can access, why would I be on a fucking iPad?
And it's the same for the Vita. Like, I played Persona 4 Golden, like, 5 times. 200 plus hours. I did all that, most of it in my house. Like, I can sit down and just focus down in a small screen. And I think it's like a weird disconnect because obviously the Japanese audience can do that as well. And it's definitely part of their scene. If you look at like the Japanese iPad games, for example.
Japanese people are more sophisticated. I wish I was Japanese, says Cynic.
No, it's
kind of makes me bad that Shinboy is not here. Sadly, he is in the working world right now. But did anybody else here like play Journey on PS3? Because that doesn't really interact, but that's definitely a game that has been hailed for the soundtrack, and it's sort of themed for each level, but it's not an interactive one.
Yeah,
see, I haven't played the game, but I listened to the soundtrack, and for me, without playing the game, the soundtrack was an entire game in itself. If that makes any sense
for Journey,
I mean, just listening to it, yeah. I mean, yeah. Just listening to it was almost like playing a game and experiencing the emotion behind what they were trying to convey.
Here's a cool thing. Like, all right, so if you guys had to pick your favorite recent gaming soundtracks, let's just say up to three, as many as you can actually name, which would they be? For me, I'll start first. It'll be, let's see, Mass Effect 2 is absolutely up there. The other one would be Bioshock Infinite, absolutely up there in terms of just fantastic soundtrack in mainly ambience, but also other stuff as well. And I'm tempted to say Portal 2, but it's one of those weird soundtracks that you can't remember any of it once the game is done. But whilst the game is going, it's all surrounding it. It definitely enforces the gameplay. Is there any other? And there's definitely the Final Fantasy games, but I'll stick with those three. Anyone else has any comers? Thurbleton? Can you name three games?
I can name a couple. I mean, I don't know if it's just because since I play this as a much like in my development ages,
I need to stop you for a second. I forgot my favorite soundtrack of all time, Persona 4.
Oh God!
No.
All right, back to you.
Joke. Anyway, Half-Life 2, just because they seemed to like, maybe it's just insane scripting, or I'm hoping it was just a really smart design, but the action music would always kick off at the right times, and Vortal Combat, not Mortal, but Vortal, is still one of my favorite, just like, get in and fight songs. I remember I would play that while dive bombing things in Warcraft, or World of Warcraft.
Nice.
In terms of recent soundtracks,
yeah.
Hotline Miami.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That game, and then also Super Meat Boy.
Yeah.
I think that, like, the really good, not roguelikes, what, like, just super platformers, Metroid games, I don't know what to call them.
Platformers.
Yeah, just constant die, I want to be the guy. I want to be the guy style right. games.
Yeah.
Need to have a really good soundtrack to be very successful and noticeable, because you're dying so much, you just want to punch something. But the music's so good, or at least keeps you wanting to play.
Yeah.
You just keep going with it. And so I think that's definitely something of note.
Squiddle,
to talk about.
What you got?
I'd have to start, I guess, I will say Bioshock Infinite, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, the main song, I would say the main song of the game really struck a chord with me.
Which one would you call the main song?
Without spoiling, all the songs you hear in that game are really good.
Yeah.
They are good. They are, but one of them actually like, hit that emotional chord in me where I was just like, this is an epic song.
A couple people think that, like, some people think that for some reason, that quartet song is the main song of that game. What was it called? God Only Knows.
No.
Yeah, God Only Knows.
I think we're in agreement that The Circle Will Be Unbroken, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Thank you.
But so not the one that's in the game. It's the one that's in the trailer that I love the most.
Oh, I have to go or back there.
It's
just sung with different tense.
All right, sure.
I would have to say the one where you go into the church, the first, you know, the opening area.
The choral, sorry.
I just sat there and listened to that for a good, like, 10 minutes.
Damn straight. High five.
But I would have to go from there, possibly to maybe Mega Man X, like throwback, just because I love that style of 8-bit audio,
right?
Kind of thing. And that was kind of like the
kids who fell in love when I like showed off the Megas, that band, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, this is. I mean, it was just awesome. I used to. I think I hear that, and I'm like, I want to be gaming right now. Like, I want to be in that universe. Whenever I hear that.
Yep.
The other one is I'm gonna have to throw out. Is it Vice City? Not Vice. Yeah, Vice City. Grand Theft Auto.
Nice.
Love the radio stations.
Yeah, and that's one of those weird things where it's like the soundtrack is kind of your own choosing. Like you can pick what soundtrack to the game you want to have. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, and they and as a note, they just released, I guess, on their site that you can actually get the playlist for each of the radio stations and purchase them or listen to them on Spotify. I don't know how you say it.
Spotify.
Spotify. There you go. Okay.
Nice. Cool. That was a cool side distortion. New Baranga.
But probably what else have you for me, this week? Like,
oh right, yeah.
Wait, no, I'm.
What's this? I'm just gonna skip you right now.
Yeah, what's, all right, fine. So, what's yours?
Oh fuck! Now I've okay. Yeah, Mass Effect 2. I definitely agree with Cynic.
Running down like the hallway at the end of the game, man. With the boss
and even like
behind
the
you.
Trailer was like so such a theatrical like movie trailer, and it's like one of my favorite trailers.
Yeah.
But regarding trailers, like. Definitely my favorite trailer. Have you guys seen the Fallout 3 E3 trailer?
Yes.
Where they have like that short commercial about the, what is it called? The vault and the dude talking to the family and the nuclear explosion in the background. And then a little bit after that, there's this amazing
juxtaposition.
Juxtaposition.
Nice.
Of just mindless violence in the Capital Wasteland along with Dear Hearts and General People.
But
and
is that in
that
the
is
game?
Literally. That song is not in the game, no.
Yeah.
It's not like, in the radio station.
I kind of want to call you out on that because not in the game, man. I know.
Yeah. But game-wise, probably recently, it's probably going to be Red Orchestra 2.
Nice.
Because outside of being straight up good music, for me, my favorite part about Red Orchestra is like the atmosphere of this like really gritty battlefield of Stalingrad. And, you know, there's tension. There's, you know, you don't know when you're going to die.
Right.
And I think the music is very silent, but it works very well with the actual game. And I think that's what's most important, rather than the music being good independently compared to how well it works with the game.
Yeah. Skyrim's also a fantastic example of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Wondering music.
So I've gone back to, I guess, my favorite of all time since I've played Age of Empires 2. That definitely reminds me of how great that soundtrack is. It still holds up really well. Same with Diablo 2. I have that on my phone and I listen to it often. But I think one of the worst, I'm going to
really,
go ahead
Diablo
and say
two?
One of the worst. Yeah,
really?
Diablo 2 is a fucking great soundtrack.
I guess. I don't know.
What was I going to say? Right. So in the Paradox games, basically, these are games you play for extended periods of time, and they have like 6 or 5 songs, and those 5 songs. So I have like 300 hours in Paradox games, so I'd be hearing this one song for at least 50 hours, right?
Man.
And like on one of the trailers, they used the base game song, and I got so mad, and it just completely ruined my excitement of a game because I'm
it's kind
sick
of a crazy
and
thing because if
music.
You look at Mass Effect 2, one of the cool things they did was. Some of the menus have their own music, and the one I'm specifically thinking of is like the exploration one with the Starfield. You know what I'm talking about with that song.
Yeah,
the scanner. That music made that experience relatively bearable.
Right.
And a lot of games like Persona 4 has different music in like the overworld as in the underworld, and having that kind of variation, even though you're only working off like a couple of tracks of general like. Continuous music definitely helps it, and I can see if a strategy game just plays one song for like 50 hours, you can get
what I loved about Age of Mythology is the sound would change depending on what was going on in the game. So there'd be battle music, there'd be like Titan music, I don't know what the fuck it was, but that sort of moving soundtrack is also nice, like that's depending on what's going on in the game.
And were we saying, like, without Guild Wars 1, man? Guild Wars 1 had some of the best music
for a long time.
Jeremy
like,
Soule,
every
general.
Time I play Guild Wars 2, it's simply just nostalgia of Guild Wars 1 music.
Exactly.
It's like music that they've taken over from Guild Wars 1 simply just reminds me. Every time I hear, like, Eye of the North music, which is, like, literally all the time in the Northern Zones, it just I immediately think of Christmas celebrations in Eye of the North and people fucking breakdancing and me doing Snowball Quest.
Some of Jeremy Soule's best work.
Definitely.
Along with
I like
Morrowind.
I like him in Common Heroes, not as much.
Yeah.
I can't feel that same sort of nostalgia when I used to play a ton of WoW.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up, like, changing all the inns, taverns, like theme music to some like new version, except for this one tavern in, I think, like the Undead Zone or something.
Right.
But my buddy and I would always just like go in there and listen to that soundtrack. And on the subject of reoccurring theme, like reoccurring music, one that I really liked back in the day, and yep. in a couple of the later games, they've like remastered it, but you don't see it, I think, in any of the newest ones. Battlefield 1942.
Oh,
that
nice.
Yeah, it's just like it's not quite full orchestra, but it's really good music and it loops so well. That's like cool. Because they know some people are going to have like the longest loading screen of all time, and it works really good.
I like how the industry is moving more towards appreciation of the music in games, especially in the indie space. Like Bastion, one of the best recent soundtracks as well. I love how you can buy that separately, and I believe they've already said you'll be able to buy the Transistor stuff music after the game comes out, and I can't wait for that. Like, music is getting more appreciated, but in the world of games and stuff, it's gonna
Another really good one is Dust Force. Like, even though I don't like, I'm not the best at the game, it's a simple platformer. If you like chiptune music, I would definitely recommend looking up the Dust Force soundtrack.
Yeah. So where do you guys stand? Like, do you think that the resurgence of chiptune music is a good thing, a bad thing, or like, do you just see, like, what's your opinion on it, Squiddle?
I feel that the people who play games in the 80s and the 90s will really get into it, and it will kind of make a game for them more than if the gameplay is bad, this music will be better, and they'll be like, this is very nostalgic for me, I'm going to keep playing this type of thing.
Right.
I don't know about the more recent generation where they want the big orchestral soundtrack. They are looking for that, and if a game doesn't have that, they're like, is that a kid game? I mean, it kind of throws me back to the whole Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
When Marty McFly is playing the game, and the kid goes, you know, oh, you have to use your hands? That's a baby's toy. You know, it kind of makes me feel like that. But I think there's a place for it, and I'm really hoping they keep that alive, at least in gaming history.
I'd love to see what the adoption rate is. I wonder how many people who are, say, in the 12 to 16-year-old range bought Super Meat Boy soundtrack, for example, or the VVVVV soundtrack,
which is amazing. Oh, God, I forgot about that. Soundtrack is amazing.
Yeah, I wonder how many people in that like age range, because definitely people like us who are maybe not new, but were like born in the 80s and games through the 90s, for example, still have like that kind of a foot in the chiptunes door. Like, we kind of still love that stuff, even though it wasn't particularly our era. And definitely people before us love that kind of stuff. But I would love to see how many people younger than us still get into it, because it's catchy music. Like, in the end, especially if you compare it to like the modern resurgence of electronica dubstep being in a form of it, for example, that can be based off some of the many like basic samples as chiptunes is based on. Like, so some of the main chord structures are still replicated between both, and the repetitiveness of both. I can definitely still see it still being aligned, but I would love to see numbers. Therapleton, what's your thought on chiptunes in modern music? Does it have a place? Like, where are you going with it?
I mean, I don't know about, like, what would you define as, like, modern music? Because music is this always evolving thing. I mean, rock and roll is just blues. And I definitely like that it's, like, a resurgence, and it seems more like its own thing, but it's taking note of, like, the old 8-bit music.
Yeah.
So, like, because the younger generations will get into it. And then we got stuff like that. Not to do like a shameless plug for these awesome two French guys, but Daft Punk Random Access Memories coming out next month.
Does anyone out there really know that?
I have my pre-order on vinyl already.
I'm really excited for that coming out.
I'm actually taking a step back and going to listen to it first, because I didn't like... I love the Tron soundtrack, but the soundtracks between Discovery and Tron, I didn't particularly enjoy. I don't know.
But yeah, it's like the 8-bit music. It's definitely... With things like Super Meat Boy, that is more like aggressive and adult version of that, which I think is really good.
Right.
Like, it's not something I would imagine like an 8-year-old would listen to. It's something like it's adult 8-bit music, which is weird.
Yeah.
Cool. It's nice that it's evolving and growing into something, and hopefully they'll be like in more games.
I'm just worried that, and the reason I think this is a question to pose is because the inverted commas indie platformer is now a thing. Because it's the thing all the indies do, because it's easy to do.
And it's always 8-bit music. It's like a gimmick now, and I think that's not a good thing.
That's why I'm worried, because it's kind of like in one kind of game. And it needs
to branch out.
Yeah, it needs to branch out. Like, I love how when Jeff and Brad were looking at Nintendo Land, they loved the menu music, which is the 8-bit version of the same music, then more than the land music. When you're in Nintendo Man, you get the same music as the menu music, but fully orchestral. And they're just like, no, just put the menu back on, man. I love that shit. Yeah. I can see it coming back.
And very similar to when Guild Wars 2 did their, you know, April 1st, the MIDI soundtrack when you loaded in. That was, I heard that. I just sat there listening to it. I absolutely loved that. And the whole super box, I can't think of the name.
Super Adventure Box.
There you go. I love the soundtrack and that entire thing.
Yeah. Which again, that is still available. Just like search for Guild Wars 2 SoundCloud,
Damn,
you can listen to it.
But it's still concerning because that is a platforming section, and you know, indie platformer, etc. I just hope.
I'm agreeing with your point. I'm just saying people who like that music. Oh yeah, out there.
Freaking awesome remixes of Guild Wars 2 stuff in 8-bit style. Damn straight. Like, people should already be sold on that. Where are we going? Oh, yeah, Sanubaram. What else have you been doing this week?
Circling back around.
Crap. One sec.
Victoria? No.
I haven't been playing any. Well, not really. I've been playing more Hearts of Iron.
Did you go to the zoo?
I won't talk about that because that's too interesting. Pardon?
Did you go to the zoo?
I have a question for you. I didn't go to the zoo, no. Nubramo.
Yep.
As previously mentioned in a lot of podcasts, we play Trouble in Terroristown every now and then.
Oh, that's what I was going to talk
about. Have you played the map that is a pretty good take on the 1985 movie Clue?
I have not seen that movie, and I would not know what that
would be. It's basically, you're playing in this old mansion, and it's just like the board game Clue, and that there's secret passages to go to all the different areas. And
you've just described about a dozen Trouble in Terroristown maps.
Yes, but this one is a like pretty verbatim of the movie that was inspired by the board game.
Well, yeah, because the board game is kind of the direct precursor to what Trouble in Terroristown is. The turncoat. The turncoat in your midst is kind of...
It's more rather than solving it, it's you're living it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I thought that's a cool little turnaround of the whole thing.
Oh, so yeah, I guess I've been playing a lot of Gary's Mod and ruining other people's experiences, and we've delved a little bit out of Trouble in Terroristown and went to Jailbreak. So the thing about Jailbreak is I used to play a lot of Jailbreak in Counter-Strike Source. It wasn't Jailbreak.
I'm so lost. What's Jailbreak?
Yeah, you'll have to explain to the group.
Jailbreak is basically a game mode where one team, usually the counter-terrorists, are basically wardens in a jail, and then the terrorists are in jail cells and in a jail. And basically it's sort of like an amazing power trip experience.
What?
And people like avoiding getting killed, you know, arbitrarily. But what... Basically, about some of the 600, 700 hours I have in Source recorded, about 150 to 200 is spent in Prison Break. Wow. And so it's like – it's the difference between Jailbreak is Jailbreak has a much higher percentage of children, and basically Prison Break is like there's rules. If you're a squeaker, you get banned off the server.
What the hell are you saying?
In more or less
– Wait, children?
A squeaker, would be like a 10-year-old kid who talks in a voice like this.
Right. And so it sort of removed like the children power
tripping
aspect. Doesn't
that stop you from playing?
Huh? No, not I.
He's a few octaves lower than the required band, like you know.
Okay, sure.
Okay, no, and basically it's like an amazing power trip, and you get to go around ordering people to do whatever you want them to do, like jump on your bunk and then go to your sink and then jump again, and stupid shit like that. But it was incredibly fun because if the game worked, basically the terrorist's job is to like circumvent the orders, like literally. So if you told someone to go here, they could technically say, you didn't tell me to go directly here, so I'm going to circle around. It's like playing mind games like that. And it's like it was really fun when I played it. And when we went into this Jailbreak server, like there were like 12 of us and went to this Jailbreak server, it was just like a 10-year-old on his mic screaming. So we just enjoyed killing him over and over again. And I got to test around some roles I would like to just like fake roles, like just like, you know, your typical fat autistic. Oh, okay, I shouldn't use that word. But maybe someone with like, you know, mentally deficient tendencies.
Moving on,
Brahma, you are the salt of the earth, sir.
I am the salt of the earth. But the point is,
I'm sorry. I mean the scum of the earth.
No, but the thing is, like, the thing about Garry's Mod is it, you won't have much fun if you're playing it seriously. The best way to do it is when you ruin other people's experience. Basically,
God damn,
like,
it.
You're sucking the enjoyment from them.
Into yourself. I hate you.
Into yourself, right?
I hate you. This is the worst.
Except you suck enjoyment instead of blood.
Let's move on. I want to talk to someone who plays games well and nicely.
Wait, okay, but I played other games.
Come to the wrong podcast.
Come to the wrong podcast. And I guess I've been playing more Age of Empires 2. And I guess I've hit a wall with Age of Empires 2 where, because people don't really like playing PvP, is what I found. People just don't really like playing PvP in strategy games.
I have my hand raised.
And if you do that, you're just a big fucking wuss.
Yeah,
I'm fine because with that. The biggest problem with Age of Empires is they didn't fix any of the AI from the original game. They literally ported it over with like slightly higher textures on water and the fog of war. How fucked up is that? The fog of war, basically, they put in so much textures that if the map is covered, so in the very beginning of the game in the fog of war, it lags like shit.
Nice.
It's the worst thing. But they added like 2 or 3 frames to animation, so that makes it, what, 4 frames?
You said this last week, but go on.
Yeah, I said this, but I'm going to go over it again because fuck you. So what happens is if you have the highest score, which I normally do because no one can fucking play Age of Empires, all of the AI band together and focus on destroying you. So you'd have like people walking over other people's vases just to destroy me, and that ruins my fucking enjoyment. That's not fun. That's like griefing. I'm getting griefed by the computer. That's not fair.
Well, only it sounds I like something that. That's the computers are doing what the humans don't realize they should be doing, which is gang up on you.
I don't think it's fair, and I think I'm gonna ask Steam for a refund.
Good luck.
It's fine because my uncle is Garry, who made Garry's Mod.
Anything else you've been playing?
I probably shouldn't say this, so no. There was one game I shouldn't be talking about, so never mind.
Sure. Is it in beta, or is it like a horrible hentai game that you probably shouldn't talk about anyway?
I'm really intrigued when he says I should not be talking about this.
I am kind of bummed that like Noob wasn't able to watch Patrick play Jurassic Lark.
See, I was fucking watching 24
Jurassic
with
Heart.
Dad. I guess I could talk about this. I was watching 24 with my dad. I plugged my computer into my television. Uh-huh. I was watching 24 with my dad. And I just start getting like this flurries of fucking Steam messages like from like 7 people messaging me. You have to go on the live stream. There's something really exciting going on. And
it was.
It was pretty exciting.
Fucking dating sim, big deal. I play like hundreds of those. Like,
yeah, but have you ever gotten a great ending?
What do you mean? There's always great endings. That's the way you play.
Have you ever seen Patrick and the rest of the Giant Bomb people actually intrigued about it?
That was the thing. No. Like, the world turned topsy-turvy.
They were like, we'll go down this hole. Okay.
They played a dating sim, then Dota 2. That was the weirdest experience. Speaking of Dota 2, though, Darbleton.
Oh,
well, it's not only myself, but also I believe Squiddle was playing with us last night too, right?
I didn't play. I got it. Durin sent me a code. I have it. Had it downloaded, and I went into spectator mode. Everybody stopped after the match you guys were playing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, but you know, I'll be ready for next time though. This time.
Yeah, I guess on the heels of the Giant Bomb, well, Brad like starting to play Dota 2,
mm-hmm.
A bunch of people were like, all right, we'll hand out all these Steam codes. You guys can play. It's going to be a free game. It's like, okay. and I've actually been with like the MOBA scene for a long time. I was playing Dota All-Stars back when it was on Warcraft 3.
Right.
That's right, kids. There was a strategy game before World of Warcraft.
Well, StarCraft 2.
I'd just like to say that Bass Hunter made it iconic in one of his songs, Dota.
Yeah.
Dota All Stars was shit. I hope you remember that. Third,
it was. I mean, like, it's. I actually,
the people playing it were just shitheads, and the game itself.
Well, that hasn't
just,
changed.
That hasn't.
No, I mean, like, it was still pretty popular. No, but
come play Heroes of New Earth. It's full of such nice people like myself.
No.
So is this anything, your first foray into Dota 2? Or?
But no. Well, it's first foray into Dota 2, yes. Yeah. But the reason why I quit Dota All-Stars, a.k.a. Dota 1, was just because they weren't adding new heroes. So it was just this, like, there were some 40 permanent heroes. And it was more or less an item game. And, like, this hero would always go with this item set, which would then trump, like, anything, say, for, like, these two other, like, counter heroes.
Right.
And so it's this big, like, rock, paper, scissors match. And once I realized that, like, that's what the meta was, it's like, oh, well, this is kind of a stupid game.
Isn't it still the same thing, though, to some extent?
Yeah, it is.
It is
exactly the same fucking thing.
But is it more balanced now than it was then? Or
it was always balanced. Like, because
is Noob roboting for you as well, or is it just me?
He is roboting. I guess I'll follow up what he's saying. It's balanced, but it isn't. I mean, like, it's like you have to, like, know all 40 champions and all the items and know, like, okay, if this champion I'm playing is this guy, I have to have this item matchup. So the argument that it's much easier to get into is sort of a cop out because, like, well, it's much easier to get into than League of Legends. Because when you get into League of Legends, which I've actually played a lot of as well, and I'll try and be brief with this point, but you can only play, like, 8 champions, and you don't get access to any of the, like, talent tree or rune system, like the minor bonuses they give. So that initial step is pretty easy for people to get into because, like, oh, I can only choose 8 instead of, oh, I can only choose these 40.
Right.
And they both do a good job of, like, recommending items. And Dota, the one thing Dota has going for it with Steam, and I really applaud this, is they're trying to make tutorials and have, like, I think they talked about having, like, a mentoring system, which if that works, like, maybe they'll actually keep the community not hectic. But for both games, it's still, if you aren't watching all your enemies and all your teammates in, like, 20 minutes after, like, 20 minutes into the game and on, the slightest move will change the momentum and the game will go either way. And it's really depressing.
And the slightest move would cause your team to freak out at you. Yeah. Don't forget that.
They will rage at you for, like, being in the bush instead of being by the tower and getting yourself killed and then making the next team fight a 4v5 and making them lose that team fight and pushing.
And the thing is, like, it's better with Dota 2 right as of now because it's still fairly new. So there's, like, an influx of new players.
Well, it's like the third biggest game as opposed to the biggest game.
Right. So. If you were playing Dota All-Stars in, like, 07, 08, it was the worst thing.
It's the point where, like, I would probably have a more enjoyable time playing a, like, 4v4 StarCraft than I would, like, 5v5 Dota.
So
it's just more forgivable.
Is this a game where you could, like, just fucking turn off chat and ignore those assholes, or?
No, absolutely not.
It needs to be a game about communication, almost to the point of they need voice comms. Because, if you're typing, you're standing still.
Is it true that the people on voice comms are significantly nicer than the people on chat?
No.
I guess, like, per capita, yes, but I mean, like, it gets rid of a little bit of that
Okay, to be fair, I don't play that much Dota. I play very little Dota, but I play lots of Heroes and Heroes, and I guess that's, like, an even bleaker perspective on the community of MOBAs. I think biggest problem. So did Dota add the concede? Can you concede matches in Dota now?
Right, I can no longer understand what you're saying. It was okay there for a second.
He
is becoming in the Dota.
But essentially saying that Han is worse than Dota in some cases.
Yeah. Really, anybody who wants to, the best MOBA to get into, and I'm not sure about the price, but it'd be a fun game with friends, is Smite.
Smite looked fun when I saw that.
But it's more of a third person behind the back than, well, behind the shoulder.
Well, it sounded like the people who got into Smite are more of, like, the progressives who want to see something different about the genre. So you're kind of seeing a different group of people than the diehards who are still playing Dota 2 and LoL. And a smaller group of people.
But yeah, it's complete static. Oh, God.
Oh, poor
dude. The Dota has come for him. He's been attacked by Gabe Newell.
I will have to say, when I launched Dota 2, when I got in there, the tutorial system that they provided you, that you have to go through the first time, was pretty good. I mean, they did a really good job kind of showing you how you need to do things, going back to the shop and all that kind of stuff. So I think if they tweak it, it'll be really, really good.
And that being said, like, it's definitely, it was still a fun game. League, Dota, any of the MOBAs to play with just like a bunch of friends, either the five of you guys playing against people you don't know, or like everyone, like a 5v5, like all friends on the same mobile channel talking, having fun, talking smack to each other.
Yeah.
That is fun. The competitive side of it, like the actual like esports and all that, that is for high schoolers and like that age group, I guess, the people like them young and.
Yeah, do you think that's a large portion of the like these free MOBA crowds? Because I can see that being a huge draw. Like being a free game that's really competitive that a lot of people play is pretty much in the ballpark for the high school kind of age.
During class, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a great model for them. Like, and then also the business model of you're not spending 20, 30 bucks, but you can spend like, you know, 10 bucks to get this fancy outfit.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that that low barrier for entry is why the communities are so caustic, or like, that's how I kind of see it, because there's always the example of like, not that they're a fantastic community, but there's something awful forums, have had that pay to entry thing, if I'm remembering correctly, for a long time now. And that kind of, it ensures that the people who enter that want to be there and want to participate, because if you get banned, so on and so forth. Same with an online game, for example, Guild Wars 2. If you buy Guild Wars 2, you're paying the $60, and if you get banned, you're banned, and you've lost that $60. So I can see why a low barrier of entry is kind of translating to just a fucking terrible community to some extent. But I'm not sure if I'd change that, because the large community is part of why it's so competitive.
I think you like. It's in a good model. I'm okay with both existing. Mm-hmm. Like it's the free thing is there for the people who want to have that, you know, just walk in, probably get burned, but you should expect that sort of thing.
Right.
But then also you can go do this like Smite or Guild Wars 2, just like the buy entry, and it keeps a lot of people out. Like,
oh, is Smite buy to play?
I don't know. I'll check that now on Steam.
But yeah, the Smite community sounded pretty cool. Anything else? What else have you been playing?
Like nothing new, like Dota, Guild Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk a little bit about the World v. World thing.
Into that. Why not?
Basically, like from the last week's 4-hour thing, if anybody sat through all of it, God bless you. But I talked about like how the new WoW update, they added this ranking system. How it works is for every rank, you get a point. Like a token, and you can use those tokens to upgrade stuff, like do more damage to like with siege, or take less damage from guards or mercenaries, or one of the big popular ones is carry more supply when you pick it up from a depot.
Yeah,
and so you have to get so much experience, like World v. World experience, to get a token. And then, for example, like most of it's 1, 2, maybe 5. The supply one's 20, but that will get you one like notch out of 5 onto this rank. And it's, you can pick whatever you want. It's not a sliding scale. Like it's not, you have to have prerequisites to access new stuff.
Oh, wait, so you have tokens that you purchase things with, like these upgrades with, or like how does it work?
Well, you have tokens that you put into, it's like skill points almost.
Okay. And so you're investing these tokens into unlocking these rewards piecemeal.
Yeah, but it's a horizontal scale where, like, as near as I can tell, nothing is required to access other stuff. It's just certain things cost a whole lot more than others.
So
that is kind of cool.
I get. So it's kind of like rewarding you for playing more, but also allowing you to customize your character is kind of how it's going.
Yeah, it's... Well, I'm guessing eventually everyone will have everything unlocked, but yeah. You can choose the pathway you want to take, which is, it's nice of them to do that.
Do you think it's a negative that everyone will have everything eventually? Because I do.
Yeah.
Well, how big an advantage is it? Like, will it get to the point where someone is new?
I think it's like 5% for anything.
Okay.
Like,
so it's not too bad.
So it's not too bad.
It's kind of weird because that's kind of... Like, how I would have done the system would be sort of like a skill tree where as you level up, you unlock a tier in that skill tree and you can only select one of the three things to activate at a time. There's a bunch of games that do this, which is essentially like at level 5, 10, 20, so 5, 10, 15, 20, you have access to 3 new skills. And at any given time, you can have one of those actives, but you can switch between them at any time. So it kind of gives you that give and take, and it allows
like the skills traits to bar?
Sorry?
Like the Guild Wars 2 traits bar?
Yeah, like traits. Exactly. I can't believe I didn't. Yes, like traits. It would be so much cooler if you had WoW traits that you unlock by WoW level, and then you can actually select and mix and match that way. Because it's actually a trade-off and allows people to customize themselves more deeply than everyone having everything. And if you do select, make it a trade-off, then you can have it to such that these things actually matter. Because at least to me, I couldn't be bothered spending time to unlock 5% less damage from guards. Like that's not worthwhile to me. The only thing I can see there is the supply, as you said, that would actually legitimately change the way I play the game. So I don't know. Thoughts, Stuart? Do you like the system, or would you like them to change it, or what?
I have things I'm for and against for WoW, but A, I don't work for ArenaNet. B, there is already a huge influx of people every day, every second, suggesting things that need to get changed with WoW.
Yeah.
And I think if I got into
more
like...
Are you one of those people?
Well, every he was, and then he stopped playing.
I tried it. Yeah. I used to be. But then I was just like, screw this.
Yep.
Is your middle name Quitter? Thurb Quitter Tom?
I think if I end up playing more, like, I definitely have some friends who play Planetside, so one of these days I will give that a try.
Right.
Dark Age of Camelot, so DAOC, I will have to give a shot.
That's an old game. Apparently there's
a new one coming out.
Cool.
But I think if I got more just like a lateral, education on all how these other things work, mm-hmm. I could then maybe have a better judgment on stuff. But I'm always for like when you get new abilities, or these high level, like high end traits or whatnot, it should be a trade off thing.
Yeah.
Like that's how you get more powerful with this, but you become vulnerable at something else. So I'm always for that style of balance or like that style of skill trading.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see that, but as you said, there's so many things with WoW that should change that this is only like one of many. So
pretty much with all my complaints can just be answered by I should just make my own game instead, because it's their game, they can do what they want with it.
Yeah, exactly. Anything outside of games that you've been doing, Thurbs? Have you been rock climbing?
Have you been watching season 1 of 24?
No, I do not watch TV. I haven't watched TV for a long time.
How good was season 1 of 24, man? Does it hold up? Is it still good?
So the show itself is great, but I think either the writers of 24 are extremely misogynistic and sexist and think women are the stupidest people on earth because that's sort of how they wrote the characters.
Well, what's his face? Chloe's not bad, isn't she?
Chloe? But she's not in season 1. I'm talking about the only person who I found tolerable is like Nina, and she just turns into a bad guy. So there you go.
Spoilers.
Why? It's season 1 of that show came out in 2002. Shut your face.
Yeah, I think it's beyond its spoiler tag at this point.
So but the thing is like
next to somebody Aris died.
So
yes.
Jack's wife dies, right? In season 1.
Yep.
Why doesn't the daughter die too? She's both the most annoying character,
she's so
and Alicia
useless.
Cuthbert, in the summer of 2000 or whatever, could not act. A fucking middle school
she's
drama student
act, she's
has
still
better emotion. You know what? The only expression she can make is just her mouth wide open.
Yeah,
and just a blank stare.
Exactly, blank stare.
Fucking,
yeah.
Oh fuck.
Like so you're basically saying it's Twilight essentially.
Well,
TV show.
There's no
sparkle though.
There's like no romance in season
one,
is there?
That's
like,
true. She does sparkle.
Is there
any
romance in season one? I don't think there is any, right?
Well, the romance is between. Well, no, there's like some sort of love triangle. It's fucking weird.
Well, it's like kind of insinuated that Nina is going for Jack as well, but
there's already been a past history of them. But the
but
point
never,
is,
yeah,
like the stupidest shit. Oh my god! I don't know how much the writers of 24 hate women.
Are you talking about the love triangle between the guy who got shot and what's her name? Is that the one you're talking about?
No! We're talking about
I have absolutely no idea what you guys are talking about.
So my parents got to 24, and I went over to their house, and they're watching it. And I sat down for like 4 hours watching it with
24
them.
24 is really good.
The middle of like season 3 or 4.
I was in like fourth grade when I saw season 1 of 24. Like. I didn't think it was that bad, but like going back to it, like fuck that show. It is bad.
Wait,
or not bad.
Are you
sorry,
pulling Patrick Klepek and hating it because of its stance of women?
The show is great. Sorry. The show is great.
Thank you.
Jack Bauer is like the greatest character in history. It's probably one of my favorite television shows.
Character in history.
Yeah, Jack Bauer. Like,
he's pretty awesome.
The man, every time, because there's like this one scene where he just rolls up a towel and he's with this like business dude who's actually a Serbian. But regardless, he's rolling up a towel and he's like, you know, in Soviet gulags, you could stick I could stick this towel down your throat. And he's talking about how as the towel slowly digests, he'd pull it out and his stomach lining would go all over his throat. Like, I'm fucking laughing out loud every time it happens because it is amazing.
I only have positive memories of 24. I only watched like four or five seasons of it, but I loved it when I did watch it.
I do believe the characters, the female characters, do get progressively more intelligent.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that the writers trying to show a human evolution? I don't fucking know.
And in the end, they have a female president. Like they do the whole thing.
So. Yeah, but she also makes stupid fucking choices, though. That's the problem.
But she's a good actress. Like, I actually like that actress. She's
pretty she nails it. All of them are mostly good actresses, save for Alicia Cuthbert.
She could play Chloe.
Maybe she has MS. I don't know. She shouldn't be an actress. She's really pretty, but that's about it.
Anyway. I've
been playing Minecraft. But, I mean, I've
Squiddle, save us. What you been doing this week?
I don't know. You want to know what I've been making in Minecraft?
No.
What have you been making in Minecraft? Let's go down this road.
I've been slowly making a like Victorian London rendition of BioShock.
Oh, how big?
Basically, I've just been making a floating city.
That's kind of cool. Nice. How many people are helping you? Just you or?
Just me. So it's going slow as hell. But
so you're not
using one
of those tools, the auto build tools or whatever?
No, it's just something I do to kill time while listening to podcasts, which I've been trying to catch up. Like, I finally caught up on after going on vacation.
Oh, the latest episode of the Thinking Cast, you mean?
And sadly, I've been playing Counter-Strike, and I keep remembering that a nice person got me CSGO.
Oh.
But I need to
install
that.
We'll talk about that. But I actually think that a 1920s or 1800s version of London but floating in the sky is way more interesting to me than what was actually in BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, but seeing a very badly programmed with Java rendition of it with blocks,
yep,
kind of looks shitty as best as I can make it.
Janky as fuck.
if you use texture packs, generally they look quite well for what the game is. It looks okay. Yeah. Looks tolerable.
Not to say that the game is bad. The game is a lot of fun, but. Why did Notch have to make it on Java?
All you need is some great music to go on in the background, and then you have a winning game right there. People will come in and just flock to it.
Well,
Beast of America, and you're there.
Pseudo 16-bit floating London BioShock with fucking good music. Yeah, I'm there. What do you guys think would be a good place for that kind of game to be set? Like, I'd love the idea. Let's rephrase that question. Where do you think is a cool era and place that not many games are set in that they should be set in? And for me...
The Dark Ages.
So we're talking about
Dark
an action
Ages
game?
Because I think depressing.
Don't like shitloads of games take place in... Because Dark Ages are essentially just medieval times, aren't they?
No, it's even more backwards than medieval times.
Well, we're talking about wood and fire and stone, aren't we?
No, are you mentioning the Dark Ages, as in like the period after the Roman Empire fell?
Yeah,
I guess I'm mentioning more of like not the knights and the chivalry and everything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, before
of
more
the,
like
more,
like
more
gritty,
of the, yeah,
like peasant to peasant fighting with
like sharp you're walking down a road in Skyrim and someone throws their crap out of the second story window on you type. You know.
Well, that's until like the late 19th century, but I want a game that's just fucking bleak and depressing, like true medieval life simulator. You're a medieval peasant. One day you go out of your farm, you get your head chopped off by a knight, and you can't do anything about it. I want to play that game, and I want to be the peasant too, and like a bleak medieval time simulator.
How about we think
actually,
of fun games?
you walk outside, the knight as he's about to chop your head off dies of the Black Plague.
And then you die of the bubonic plague.
I would say you get dysentery and die.
See, See your virtual family die of the Black Plague in real time. That I would play that game.
In terms of that era style game, I think it'd be fun to.
I don't think it's visually distinguished enough to differentiate itself from other medieval games. If you set something in the Dark Ages, because it would look the same. To the layman, it would look the same as a medieval setting game.
Actually, on the subject of games that are potentially coming out that will probably not go up to like my hopes and dreams, is a game where you're actually playing as a goddamn pirate of a Caribbean ship.
Wait, like, you're talking about
Assassin's Creed 4?
Yeah.
I kind of want that game to be awesome.
I want it to be like
the trailer really sold me on it, but that's a trailer. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I mean like that, like the first person aspect of it, whatever, but like the there is a game, an MMO called Pirates of the Burning Sea, I think by Sony, but the land combat was terrible bad of it, but the ship combat was actually really fun. It was more or less like what you played in Assassin's Creed 3, the whole chess match of using the wind and using like the direction of your ship with the cannons versus the direction of their ship with the cannons and trying to outmaneuver four or five ships with your tiny boat.
Yeah,
and that was fun.
I'm totally with you. Like that's a great example of games diversifying into like new settings. Because I don't think there are many. I don't think there are any other AAA games that fucking takes place in freaking Caribbean Sea. That looks awesome. I can't wait. I think it's mainly the setting of that makes me so excited for that game, rather than it being Assassin's Creed.
This may also be the setting of like why I like. I hate to throw back to it, but Half-Life 2 or Metro is stuff with like, you know, not the coastal side of Europe, but like the middle and the Eastern Bloc and then Russia. Like, we don't see too many games of that type other than no Russian.
Or just the ones that come straight out of Russia and are broken and janky.
Or Russian letters spelled backwards while you're playing
the game. Right, the backwards R everywhere.
Maybe that's why I like Hawken, because it's got the backwards K.
Oh, God.
Russians.
Anyway.
But yeah, what about like a game where you just Russian bear cavalry?
That would be cool.
That would be so much money to be made.
That would be like, that just made me think of like you know Life of Pi, which is just a man, a tiger, and a boat. I could
is that
see
the
that
one
being
with Osama bin Laden in the boat.
I could see that being interesting games, which are just like you and an animal surviving as a team. That could be that's kind of cute little.
And then
so like something between
with the animal, and it's like a gateway drug to furryism.
Something not quite like a full-fledged indie game, but something more fleshed out than 30 Flights of Loving.
Exclusively on Kinect.
Oh, I've only Durin's here. I talk about the new Xbox rumors, but whatever. Squiddle, what else have you been doing this week?
This week has not been much, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot of work, so I just got into playing Guild Wars again today, in fact.
Yay.
So I'm hoping to get more into gaming. I'm actually doing BioShock Infinite on the
1999?
The 1999 level.
Yeah,
and that is pretty intense. So that's kind of what I've been doing on my off time, because I can't.
Right. I don't want to go into it because we've talked about BioShock too much in this podcast, but
yeah, that's fine.
Which weapons and vigors do you find are most useful in 1999 for you?
When you get charged, that's the vigor that I use mostly once I get it. I use the revolver as my main weapon, and then whatever for my secondary rifle or whatever, I could care less. My revolver is the one I always go to.
And you play primarily a melee game? Or
No. I'm not. I don't like the melee version. I do like the gun, running gun version of it. Mm-hmm. But I do play with the other vigor. What is it? The
Return to Sender.
There you go. No, the Hawks. The Ravens.
Ravens. Yeah.
So I do mainly Raven and Charge are my two that I use.
Cool. That's interesting.
Because I distract them, run away, charge, hit them, run away, and then fire. Basically, how I play my Thief in Guild Wars 2. Very simple. So I guess that. That's what that is all about.
Nice.
No, the only way to play Thief is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then heal 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That's definitely the correct one. Squiddle, since you did jump back in, today was your first day, as you told us, of doing guild bounties and guild missions.
Yes.
Do you want to like complain with me to these two guys about yes. guild bounties or?
I do. Just because I hadn't played much and I heard about guild bounties and I'm like, man, this is a great thing, you know. And on Reddit, people are like, guild bounties are fun. And then mm-hmm. I get into it and I'm like, okay, we're gonna do a guild bounty today. And
God, Reddit's full of trolls.
The most fun that I had with that portion of it is when at the end when we were just like doing nothing as a big group, just running around. Killing things.
So, like, the guild runaround that I have made up
was more fun than the actual bounty system that they incorporated into their game.
So, when I first heard of bounties, and I think I can bring up the episode because I think I said this live, but it's essentially combining two of the things I hate most in video games, finding stuff and time limits. Like, that's what a guild bounty is, and I never even was interested in ever playing it. Is that kind of what the problem is, or what's the issue? From your guys' perspective.
I mean, like, the idea of it is I like it. The execution is really dumb.
Squiddle?
Because...
what's your stance?
Yeah, same. I mean, we played today, and I don't remember what the one we were at. The guy, you try to hit the barrel to find the guy, and then he ports to another barrel on the other side of the damn map, and you don't know if he's really there, or he's in this barrel... And then someone finds him and doesn't click him fast enough, and then he's gone, and you got to find another barrel.
Maybe it's just bad luck. Here, I'll like try and explain a bit more layman's terms.
What the fuck is that? Barrels? What is happening?
There's two types of bounties that we've seen so far. One is either they walk a set patrol route, however big or small it may be. It might cover the entire map and like might take 15 minutes to find just that one route. Or it might just be a very small one that is like, you know, a 5 minute, you know, route.
Do you guys
or something.
Just run around in one blob?
No, we would spread out and like, all right, cover these parts of the map and all that. The other type, which we have had for every time we've done like four guild bounty
random?
Attempts. Yeah, they will give you, for tier one, you get two out of like the 40 some odd, current guild bounty, like targets.
Okay.
And you have to go find them. So in this past week, like of the two we've got, like there's like, okay, we got to find these two guys. Crap. One of the guys is the like relatively easy, quote unquote, oh, I'm sorry, in Votacommas patrol route. The other one is, okay, they will be somewhere in this map. They spawn in like up to 300 locations and we have to like go to those locations and just look for a suspicious rat or a barrel, depending on which map it is. Like, you know, it's that type of. And then if we find that, they have a chance, like they will bounce from spot to spot invisibly sort of thing. Like, okay, if you destroy the barrel and he might pop out and he might not. And the barrels respawn.
That's kind of like Arma 3.
It is.
Without air support.
And you have, by the time you get to that zone and start finding barrels, you have like 12 minutes left.
But and, I think the biggest problem with it though, and I think you can agree with me on this, is that if you do find him, you can't. You have to keep attacking.
It's not a quick fight. Yeah, they are very dangerous, and it comes down to you are like you're by yourself because everyone's spread out trying to find these guys. So, and you like if you find him, you have like 5 seconds before he disappears again. So you need to talk to him, and you also need to tell your friend at that exact same time he's here. Hurry up, and then you have to last however long it takes your friends to show up while this, you know, 5 to 50 man boss is wailing on you. And that's if you die, he despawns and you have to do the whole thing over again. So, like I said, the idea of a guild having to track down this person and beat him or multiple persons is really compelling, really challenging. The execution of it, whether it be scaling so the tier ones only have a set number and the tier twos and so on have more and more to like harder and harder types to find, that could be a way of doing it. Maybe having a way of us actually tracking them other than just looking on another website.
Yeah.
Because they knew we would do this. They knew the internet would do this. I hope so. If not, they're really dumb. Because the second tier or the second guild bounty unlocked, Guild Treks, gives you 5 more minutes and it takes us 5 minutes to do this total. Like they give us 20 minutes to do this and we're doing like tier threes and tier fours of this stuff. Of nice. Like the guild tracks, which are basically just scavenger hunts. Go to an area and look for something on the ground.
Right. Which I hate.
But because those areas are all static, it is extremely easy to do those.
Right.
And they give us abundance of time.
It's kind of... Because Giant Bomb has kind of recently gone into a Monster Hunter thing as well. And
Monster Hunter.
That game actually looks pretty cool. Like, now that they showed it to me, and having just finished Dark Souls, I don't mind animation priority too much. I kind of like the idea of tracking down a monster and then fighting a multi-stage battle against a big-ass monster. And that kind of would sound like fun with friends. The thing
is, Monster Hunter is made for that.
Yeah.
That Guild Wars is not.
It's not, but it's kind of... The weird thing is, right, Guild Wars has many of the elements that would make big monster fights or big monster hunts possible. Like, you have multiple zones. You have the ability to zone and get places quickly. And then you have, like, big monsters who are already lurking around the world. The only thing missing is the ability to have boss monsters, like amped up versions of the monsters they already have. Like, all they need to do is take the same fucking character model, make him 3 times the size, and have him just wandering the world, and have that being part of the bounty. Like, they can introduce the other stuff, like items that do the equivalent of tracking balls and Monster Hunter. I can see them kind of distilling Monster Hunter down to what's fun about it and putting that into Guild Wars 2, and that being really fun. But this isn't it. Like, freaking time limits and that kind of stuff, this doesn't sound, like, fun to me.
But the thing is, Monster Hunter is instanced.
Yeah.
But even Monster Hunter has time limits, but...
Yeah.
Well, it's like an hour time limit.
Not going to hit that time limit before you really...
It's a friendly time limit rather than a limiting time limit.
Don't go AFK.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. I love the idea of multi-stage, but like big boss fights, but I just don't, because Guild Wars 1 had that. Like, Guild Wars 1 had just literally a character model like 1.2 times the size of the other character models, colored in fluoro colors that would be a boss in that little area, right? And that's who you'd cut monsters from.
Fuck, we should play Monster
Hunter. No, I'm not doing that. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't have a Wii U.
I played so much Monster Hunter on my PSP until I broke it, but then...
But if I had a Wii U and you had a Wii U, I'd consider playing Monster Hunter with you, but...
No, I like the PS2 version, you get the emulator on the PC, and then you can play multiplayer through that.
Actually, stick a control. That sounds pretty fun, actually.
In Monster Hunter 2, you can play that. It's quite good.
Yeah, if it was on PC or
absolutely
on my phone, I'd play
the shit out of it.
Just because I have both those platforms. But I love the game, I love the look of it, but I'm not going to go out and buy an entire device just to play a game.
I'm going to buy a 3DS or a Wii U.
Well, like, the only thing I would ever, like, to be fair, I was once contemplating buying a 3DS for one game. But then I realized I should.
Now, if you want to play a game where like a bunch of you and your friends have to team up to take on this massive thing,
right?
I might be convinced to do Dragon's Dogma, because that looks like another great take on the idea of. I'm not sure there's multiplayer as much as like you can play. Well, Dragon's Dogma 2.
Team,
I'm not.
Right?
Yeah, like the Dragon Dogma 2 will hopefully have multiplayer co-op or something, man. But. That combat seems like that needs to be in MMOs.
Yeah, that looked really
cool. The idea
cool,
like of jumping climbing
up
on top of a giant boss seems like a great application to MMOs, which always like having bigger and bigger boss fights.
Yeah, like you don't need a Shadow of the Colossus size boss to make climbing on top of it and all that kind of stuff fun. Like, Dragon's Dogma had a really
this
cool
one time I climbed up top of a dragon in Skyrim and then my game crashed.
Yeah, you don't want to crash your game.
That's because you had no clip on.
No, it the animation suddenly froze, and I was stuck in the dragon, and then I was like moving around and frozen.
I'm surprised you bought a dragon.
And you were stuck in the dragon. You became the dragonborn.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, I was birthing the dragon out of my male character.
Oh, okay.
Squiddle,
so,
anything else?
Anyway, yeah, it's in terms of guild missions, you probably won't hear about that for another 2 weeks at the earliest.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yay, Squiddle,
hooray.
What's up?
For me, that's about it on the gaming front. Hopefully, there'll be more in the near future.
Is it breaking up for you guys as well? Is it,
yeah,
a little
has the disease just spread to Squiddle?
I've actually exported my.
I'm the only one that's left. Oh no, it's coming for me. Squiddle, have you seen any movies? Because I forgot to mention did I mention last week while I was on vacation I saw the Rock featuring G.I. Joe?
What? No. Oh, yeah, I watched that too.
Wow.
I did put that in the correct order.
The Rock featuring G.I. Joe.
I totally played that.
That's pretty obvious. Pretty,
That was actually incredibly surprising that they killed off. I don't care about spoilers for this.
Well, no, it's not that they killed off. It's that they said that they were going to kill him off, and because of all the other movies he was in, everyone was like, "Oh no, what was it? Chad? I always do it wrong. Chad or Tating? So it's probably Tanner Tating.
Channing Tatum.
I just keep. He looks so much like a Chad. I want to call him Chad.
Chadding because he's a douche.
Anyway, everyone was so behind him. Like, he's like, oh, this guy's an amazing actor. Ooh, we want him in our movie.
He's really not.
They said they were going to like push the movie back so they could add more scenes and make him a more important character.
God damn it!
And he still dies like 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, man. I'm not sure if The Rock, G.I. Joe, is the appropriate name, or Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe.
Snake Eyes. So much ninja in that game, or in that movie.
To be fair, like, when I finished watching the first movie, I just wanted more ninjas. But what I didn't want was awesome ninja scene cut to, like, quiet scene with a dude and a chick, and the chick's changing in the background, cut back to ninjas. Like, I don't... Just take ninja. Out anything but the ninjas, and just give me a ninja movie. Because... You've done that. Like, they did the things that you need to do. There was the quest with the sword that doesn't cut, and to capture him with the sword. And yeah, it was great. Like, some parts.
So what you're saying is it could be a great game when they make the full-fledged game of it.
The RZA.
Yeah, the RZA. Because of course, right? He's in all the kung fu movies now. It's just great. It's just great.
It's amazing. It was so dumb. It was so amazing to watch, and so hilarious, and so dumb.
And to be clear, don't pay money anytime soon to watch the movie. Catch it on Netflix.
At the cheapest.
Yeah.
At the most expensive.
Like, just don't. But if you want like half a good movie and half a pretty bad movie half a good movie, a quarter a pretty bad movie, and a quarter just the worst fucking melodrama in the world, then watch this movie. It's pretty cool. But I actually rather G.I. Joe 1, because that was fucking amazing. As a person who never cared about G.I. Joe.
The 24 movie.
Damn straight. Kiefer Sutherland, the movie, with featuring
actors from 24. It is a whole 24-hour long movie.
Kiefer Sutherland, the movie.
There are four intermissions.
Featuring Kevin Bacon.
The fact that it has to be set in real time, it means because they need to like put in content, because you can't have just one thing. It just, you have to actually watch the mother and the daughter, which are like the fucking worst scenes in season 1. It is absolutely awful. It's fuck that.
All right, so I guess we can go to why did
the daughter die?
Squiddle, now that your mic is better, any movies or any other games?
No,
I actually have Django Unchained to watch. I was gonna watch it this evening. Seen it yet.
Awesome.
That came out this past Tuesday, I believe.
I need to buy that.
And so I will be watching that probably after we are done here.
Have you seen it before?
No, not seen it yet.
You are in for a treat.
So yeah. But I love Tarantino flicks. Absolutely love them. So I think it'll be really fun.
I'm not really spoiling anything, but there will come a point in the movie, and you'll know this point, but it's where most movies will end, and Tarantino just goes a completely other direction.
Yeah. He does that.
It's awesome.
I'm definitely looking forward to it. But no other movies I've seen. I have been watching a thing on Netflix recently, which is going to kind of seem really weird, I guess. But Heart of Dixie, I got into watching.
What's that about? Is this weird? What's happening?
Is it about being a Dixie?
No, it's essentially a New York woman who becomes a doctor. She wants to be a thoracic surgeon. Ends up being told by the head of the hospital that she does not have any good. She's not good with people.
Qualifications?
She's good with qualifications, but she's not good with people. No good bedside.
No social skills.
That's funny.
Right. So she has to go into
like a doctor house or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly. So she has to go into general practice for a year before they look at her as the head thoracic surgeon. And I guess this guy approached her during her college speech that she gave and said, "I'd like you to come to Bluebell and work in my practice, my GP practice." And she said, "No, I'm actually going to be a surgeon, but thanks anyway."
Uh-huh.
And ends up getting a postcard from him, calls up and says, "I'm heading out there." And then that's where it all starts off.
And Bluebell is in the South?
Yeah, it's in Heart of Dixie. I can't remember the state that it's in. But yeah, it's
TV?
In the Dixie line. Not reality.
It's all drama.
Okay. Yeah, it's all drama.
Oh, okay.
But I've been watching that. And I just finished today Breakout Kings, the second season.
What's that?
Which was a very, very B-rated show, but I love B-rated things.
What?
With what's a passion. Basically, these guys are on, two guys and a lady are on in prison, and they get this thing where they help catch criminals. They get marks taken off of their ears by helping out the U.S. Marshals.
Okay.
And so the whole thing is them helping out, getting people who break out of prison and then finding out how they broke out and how to catch them. And that's basically the whole premise of the show.
Okay. That sounds relatively interesting, I guess.
So that's what I've been watching.
Cool.
I recently watched Argo. Fuck that movie.
I haven't watched Argo.
Everybody tells me to watch Argo. I've not seen it yet, though.
Yeah.
I guess I was looking for less Hollywood, more historical, like Zero Dark Thirty, or like It Makes Sense. But it's like, if you took the movie and then shoved it into the timeline of the world or even reality, it simply wouldn't make any sense. Like,
right.
What?
Well, it does have Ben Affleck in it.
Man, this is a good year for movies.
I guess I can't spoil the ending, even though, oh no, because it's not factual, I can't spoil the ending.
Did anyone know when Dust and Legion Tales coming out on PC? It was supposed to come out this month, but it hasn't come out yet. I can't wait for that.
What are you, a furry?
Speaking of furries, that game.
Yeah, awesome. All I know is during PAX East, he talked about it coming out April, like it's sometime this year.
Yeah,
it's coming out on Steam.
He said that it was going to come out at the end of this month, possibly beginning of next month.
Yeah, I'm going
to. And
buy
so I'm really that. Looking forward to that because I never really played the game or heard of it, but I never saw it. Mm-hmm. When I watched the stream on Twitch when he did the panel, it was,
right.
I was hooked on it. So,
to folks who don't know, just a quick overview: what is Dust and Legion 2?
It's a
what's amazing about it?
So much fur.
So apparently, what's amazing about it is the story. But what it is it's a 2D art style. It's not an indie platformer; it's an indie like kind of action brawler kind of thing, mixed with platforming elements. So think of something along the lines of. It wouldn't be Metroid. It wouldn't be Super Meat Boy. No. Something with a sword. Anyway, so you're a dude with a sword. You jump around platforms and you fight dudes.
That's like a 2D Diablo, sort of like the action combat combos.
Yeah, mixed with Well, it's unlike Diablo, it has actual combos. So you're.
I think it's misleading to call it a dude.
So, well, we'll get there. So it's a dude with a sword,
masculine voice
who talks to him, and a side character who runs around with him. They talk and stuff. But apparently the actual game itself, even though it has a comparatively cutesy art style, is about genocide. And it's actually supposedly a really interesting and engrossing story that's well worth, like, people put it up there along the lines of fantastic indie stories from that era. Like, I think that it came out the same year as Bastion. So I think it was, like, along those lines of how good the story is in this game, perhaps better. And that's what got me interested in it. The reason why no one bought the game, though, apparently, was because of its art style, which is a, it's furry. Like, there's no real way to, like, fucking pussyfoot around it. It's cat dudes and cat ladies and shit like that.
I guess that makes sense, because I fell in love with the actual sidekick character. I was like, that is a cool character. So I mean, guess that speaks to...
You better check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Was your brain searching for a braid for story type?
Like
the reveal at the end was just like, oh no.
No, I didn't. I haven't played Raid. I think Bastion is a good story.
What I don't understand about the cover, it's like there's Korean characters. It just means dust in Korean. Like, what is this? No one's Korean. What is this?
I think the most amazing thing, and I think the guy is... He looks a little bit Korean.
No.
From PAX.
That's the most amazing thing? What?
He looked already... No, the most amazing thing was... It was 85 to 90% of the game was made by one guy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That is like the only thing he outsourced was music.
But
it started off as like a hobby, and he's like, oh, I can actually make this. This is turning into a game.
I think saying that is kind of detracting, because a lot of people would say that and say, oh, this is supposed to be good for a game made by one dude. But no, this is. Supposedly a game which is good by any standard. Like, it's an actual...
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
And it's just like, one guy did this. Holy crap.
Yeah, exactly. It's
And that guy, I mean, it would have taken him a lot longer to get it out. He actually had to get someone to come in and say, you know, can you organize everything for me and help me kind of get things finished.
Exactly.
Essentially,
like the only thing he really needed was like production help and the music. I think were the only things he didn't do. Like he fucking made that game. But even aside from that, like, it's apparently really good. Runs really smooth on Xbox 360. It was originally on Xbox Live Arcade, but no one bought it. And finally, well, apparently from general here's word in the street is its sales didn't go that well, but he's putting out on Steam, which is kind of the awesome part, because I love how indie games are getting like a second life on Steam, especially ones like this, which I think do deserve the attention. Because I didn't buy it because I don't really play games on my 360 that much.
I imagine it'll probably get like a third hurrah on GOG in a couple of years, like a year or two.
Yeah,
or maybe Humble Bundle.
Exactly. So I'm totally there. So I literally have it written down, and I keep checking in on when that game's coming out because it's supposed to look awesome. But
I will say it has a cult following. I mean, the people who love it absolutely love it and will defend it to the end.
Have you played it, or has anyone here played it?
I have not. I haven't played it myself.
Exactly. I can't wait. Are you planning to?
You fell in love with the sidekick.
I've only seen footage of it. I do not. I don't give Xbox money to play online multiplayer.
That's
games.
That's kind of where I am as well. I just don't like the way Microsoft is going with their business model. So I don't really spend money on Xbox often. But no, I knew this game was coming to Steam. Like it's an indie game. Obviously, it'll come to Steam, and it is. So anyway, I guess we'll go to what I've been doing this week, and I've actually been doing quite a bit. I think the primary one is what Doubleton's been talking about before, which was last week we had a discussion about Bioshock Infinite and how I love the story for that, and Doubleton was drawing many analogies between it and Half-Life 2, and I'd never played Half-Life 2. So I was like, during the week, I was like, oh, I really want a game that has an awesome story, because I'm out of books to read. Like, I don't have any books on my reading list that I remotely feel like getting to at the moment, and I really want an engrossing story to experience. And he gave me
a book list.
He gave me Half-Life 2, which was really nice of him. And so I chucked it in. So Thurbleton's played Half-Life 2. Noob, have you finished Half-Life 2 or played Half-Life 2?
Who the fuck hasn't played Half-Life 2?
Me,
you are the only person in the world who has not played Half-Life 2.
Exactly, me at the time.
My dead grandma has played Half-Life 2.
Squiddle, I assume you're also.
I played it, and I believe I finished it. I can't remember; it's been quite a while.
Nice.
But the ending, for me, it just wasn't. Can I just say that it did not hold up for me in my nostalgia that Half-Life 1 did?
Mm-hmm.
But okay, it was a very good game.
Did you play Episode 1 and Episode 2?
No.
Because, I mean, it is a bit of a cop-out, but at the end of Half-Life 2, they knew that they were going to do an Episode 1, so that's why they probably ended it the way they did.
Mm. Okay, yeah, I had not played Episode 1 or 2. I probably should before I make, you know, my complete judgment on it, but yeah.
No, I mean, like, this is, I'm hoping Noob is on my side, but this is definitely a 2-4 and 2 against. So this could potentially be an interesting discussion back and forth.
Wait, what are we discussing?
So I didn't like it. I guess we can just jump into that. I didn't like it at all.
The monocle has just fallen off. You don't like it? Great Scott.
So again, I'm coming off playing Bioshock Infinite, and I'm a person who doesn't play many shooters at all. So for me, that game was actually played pretty well, and I had fun with it. So I should give you some perspective, because I think people who actually play a lot of shooters found Bioshock Infinite a bit lacking on the shooter department. So,
well, I think before the rest of the group makes assumptions, how far into the game before you said, I'm done?
I think it was... Okay, I'm not sure how much it would translate to normal hours, because I played it.
No, just weird, like, just tell the story of, like,
what this one part. I was on a rooftop and I fell, so I exited the game.
Lay it out front. I got to just after the speedboat sequence.
You got to play more than that.
Wait, okay.
I'm not going to play more.
The hoverboat.
The hoverboat, yeah.
The mudskip.
Oh, that's like one act.
No, it's like three acts.
He didn't get Father Grigori. He didn't get the 0 point gravity manipulator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he didn't even meet Eli yet, basically.
Yeah,
I know it was already done.
None of the big story beats. He didn't meet the head boss, which actually that is crazy story stuff.
He hasn't even.
But
met
it wasn't
Green?
For story. Well, no, it was would've. Partially for story, but also mainly for. It was kind of the meeting of both my disliking the story, how it was presented, and the gameplay and how that was presented, because All right, so me playing Half-Life 2 was me jumping into the game. I didn't know what to expect. It defaulted to easy, so I was like, yes, this game knows how I like to play games, and I just started playing. So I jumped in, and you start off on that train, and you have the same thing where you walk around, you talk to someone, they say one line of dialogue, and then they just stare blankly at you. And at that point, I was like, oh, okay. So that's why when people did that in Bioshock Infinite, no one said a word. Because I actually was pretty vocal in my complaining as to how, like, two-dimensional and, like, theme park ridey Bioshock Infinite was.
This came out in 2005.
Yeah.
I think it's 2004 even. But more so than that, like, the thing that you wanted was you actually walk up to them and you press E as if you're walking up to talk to somebody.
Yeah. You actually do that because if you walk up to people in Half-Life 2, they don't necessarily start talking to you. But if you did hit E, then they usually say a line or two, which is kind of cool. But I want a game where you talk to people. Like I love Mass Effect.
You are playing a first-person shooter.
I love Mass Effect. I need to clarify and that. I know Mass Effect came out in, 2009 or whatever. And so many years had passed in terms of what people have been doing with games. But the fact that this shared that with Bioshock Infinite was very revelatory for me. To be clear, like, I appreciate Half-Life 2 and what it does, at least what I've seen of it. I just don't enjoy it. So this whole time was kind of like a learning experience for me rather than playing a game for the fun of it. So I was like, hey, so this is kind of where that started with the two-dimensional people being surrounded by cardboard cutouts, essentially, with just one line of dialogue and so on and so forth. And so I started out, I'm like, okay, cool, that's interesting. I walk outside, and there's a big screen there, and it's a dude face, and he's monologuing about society. And I was like, huh, okay.
And did you just, like, because Breen, like, the guy who's monologuing forever, does, like, 5 minutes for each, like,
yeah,
each level and whatnot. He's talking for a long time. Did you sit there and listen to him?
I watched that one, and apparently the one outside there is also a different one, so I watched that one as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched the whole thing.
And then the one in the apartment, I think, is different as well.
Yeah, I think I ran through the apartment because of the whole chase and stuff there. Because by then I was, like, already kind of freaking out about the police. But, so yeah, I watched that. And again, this is coming from me having just played Bioshock Infinite, where I was like, okay, so this is just kind of the beginnings of the tropes that were developed into what Bioshock Infinite became, right? This is kind of like PC gaming history that I'm seeing here. And so I can recognize that when this game did that, it was probably an interesting... Was it? Like, am I assuming too much here in saying that it was an interesting view of how to approach the main villain? Like, is this one of the first games that did, like, the whole face?
I don't know about the approach the main villain, but, like, definitely the way they portrayed it and, like, the whole setup of it, as well as the main thing about that game was the gravity, the physics engine. It was so much better than anything else at that time.
Right.
Ragdoll. That was, like, the first game with ragdoll physics, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
I think they played too much to that. I mean, to a fault, in my opinion. That was kind of like what they everything you interacted with
every,
had
every
to have
puzzle
that.
Was hey, check out we have a seesaw.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll get there. But, like, how'd you guys did you? I'm not sure because it was a long time for all of you, but did you feel like the world was really engrossing when you walked into it?
I guess I can do my schlock thing. Mm-hmm. But when I played the game, it was not at release. It was like in 08, 07.
Right.
So, like, by that time, a lot of the magic and, like, the glamour of Half-Life 2 sort of passed. Mm-hmm. So while I thought it was an amazing game, I would think it's overrated to how much people talk about it. But at the same time, I found it incredibly enjoyable. And I think one of my problems is I don't think that sort of story – like, that sort of character-driven story works as well in a fast-paced first-person shooter.
Exactly.
As what you're talking about, Snake.
Yeah. That's kind of how I felt with it as well. So I had that moment with the dude in the train station, and I was like, okay, I'm slowly walking through the world, taking everything in. And this is before you have the suit, so there's no speed or anything like that. So you're just kind of walking at human speeds and taking everything in. And I was like, okay, this is kind of like... And I'm sorry for drawing so many, like, parallels here, but this is kind of like Bioshock Infinite. I'm in a world I've never been to, in a city that's kind of onto itself.
I agree that you are – I'm happy you're making those points because those are the same points I was making.
Yeah, Exactly. So it's like, there's a city unto itself. It's a city state. There's people here. They clearly have their own government. That's really interesting and weird, and has like weird demands upon society, and people don't seem too happy.
It's just straight up dystopia. It's not like, oh, there's some people who are living the high life and all that. It's just straight up everyone's
there's one person living the semi-high life, and the rest are rock bottom.
Well, kind of, like, because you only really see the suburbs. There's tower, like, there's the proper skyscrapers in the distance. I assume people in those skyscrapers are, like, the upper class.
No, it was just, like, it's, you if you kept playing, you would get into the Citadel, but it's just, that is the one size skyscraper.
Okay.
It's full of aliens.
So it set up the world, and that's pretty cool. And by this point, it was actually not so bad, because you talk to people and I'd be prompting them by hitting E, and they'd say their one or two lines of dialogue and I'd move on. And when I walked up to the guards, it was actually kind of effective. Like, you walk up to a guard and if you're not supposed to be there, you have like no armament or anything on you at the time. So he like raises his shock stick and I literally had the reaction where I'd back up. Like, it was effective. So all that was cool. Like, the animations was believable. The atmosphere was very conducive to feeling powerless and under threat, which is really cool, especially with, like, going through like the grates, not the grates, but like the fences, and getting into like just getting into the city, leaving the train station was a kind of like harrowing experience. But anyway, so that happened, and finally after that I was like, okay, getting into it, exploring the world, so on and so forth. You get into the best sequence of what I played of the game, which was the chase through the apartments, which I legitimately enjoyed. That was awesome. Because you go up the apartment stairs, they have the dudes knocking on the door and breaking into the door, the policemen and all that kind of crap. They look scary.
It's like they're always just behind you, sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and they did a fantastic job of you feeling like you're running from them. But I don't know if you could actually get caught if you play
it. You could. If you're going too slow, you get killed.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Because I was like, I'm making mistakes. I'm taking the wrong like turns every now and then, but I'm still kind of making my progress through it. And I felt like it was a crazy high-paced action chase through fucking rooftops and stuff.
As a whole is like maybe a minute, 2 minutes. It's broken up with a mini loading section, which that was just. That's how small the levels were in those days.
Yeah, and
the loading screens killed me.
Exactly, it was awful. Because they really hurt the pacing. But it was kind of me saying, okay, I'll give it that because it is a early 2000s game. It kind of has to load. Yeah, that really did kill pace. But you know, you're right. It really did feel awesome. That whole running away sequence was really cool. And not having a weapon, that kind of stuff, was awesome. Like there's no other way to put it. But then I get to when it. So at this point, I'm really liking the game to some extent. Like, there's weird things with me. Like, every time, everything's interactable, which is weird to me. Like, picking up a phone, like the telephone handle from a phone booth. I'm like, why did they even let me do this? This is kind of stupid. But okay, sure. I'm not going to complain that there's more things interactable with not owner, but whatever. Is Shinboy coming in? Is that happening?
Maybe we're working on it.
But. Oh, Shinbo's coming in. Cool, new entry. So that's all awesome. And then I get to where I start hating the game, and that's when I meet the actual cast, or half the cast, with the your dude friend from Black Mesa.
Tell me you didn't snicker a little bit when you saw Hedy Lamarr.
What?
The head crab, his pet head crab.
Head crab. That. Was the most endearing thing about that whole sequence. But the acting...
Barney, you're not a pet person. Ugh.
It was... So, it was an example of the first time I'd seen this, which was excellent, excellent timing and script writing. So the script was impeccable and it actually legitimately made me laugh. But the acting was so bad.
That is... Half-Life is a game that very few times do they try and, like, do they force you to be in a position where you can't just look around or move around.
Right, right.
And so because of that, it has to be the system of they aren't really interacting with each other as much as they're making their own independent, like, gestures and postures mm-hmm. while also doing their best to look at the player character.
Yeah.
Do you feel that it would have been it would have made the game better if the main character spoke on some level as
opposed
to being silent.
And this is what I was telling Thorbjörn. I was like, yeah, I've forgotten how much I hate silent protagonists. It's the worst. I was like, I want to talk. It's kind of the thing. Like, if this was Mass Effect, I'd be able to talk to these people. I'd be able to have a conversation. I'd be able to find out more about the world. Like, how am I a person, a freaking quantum scientist dude or whatever, like atomic scientist, who walks into a place, a new environment, and doesn't start investigating and getting information about the place around you and learning about the world through talking with people, interacting with people. Like, especially since you're supposed to be in sleep for like 20 years or whatever and getting up and walking out, wouldn't you want to find out about everything like as quickly as possible to, especially since you're in a dangerous situation, you'd want information, but I can't talk to anyone.
It's sort of like that joke with Portal where all you have to do to turn off GLaDOS is just say the shutdown command, which is turn off, but Shell's a mute. Like, they actually, right. I think at the end of Portal 1 or Portal 2, they actually had a plan where she just said turn off. And when testing, nobody understood, like, wait, that was me saying that?
Yeah, I'd see myself being entirely confused.
And also, like, with, like, remember that game originally came out in, what, 1994 with Half-Life 1?
Mm-hmm.
And that was more like, I think that was like five guys who made that. I'll see if I can add Shin real fast. But it was, they had, I'm losing train of thought.
The crazy thing was, I love Portal.
They tried to make it, like, yeah, they tried to make it simple. And that was the days of people would read the, like, the instruction manuals to find out the lore while the game was loading up on the disc.
Right. But it's such a good... I actually didn't think of that point. I love fucking Portal. Like, I love Portal and Portal 2. They're silent protagonist games like Half-Life 2, but I don't know why I hate Half-Life. I think the difference is, in Portal and Portal 2, the only people you have to interact with are GLaDOS and Wheatley, or whatever the fuck his name was, guy who's walking around with you. And they'd be off doing their own thing most of the time. Like, most of the time, you are there by yourself in an empty room with nothing but turrets there and maybe your companion cube or sphere. And that's it. Like, there's no one to talk to anyway. In here, right. I'm in a world surrounded by people, and I can't talk to them.
But and I have the same problem with Bioshock. I think that's why you don't like it, is one is the thing is GLaDOS and Wheatley are not people. They're just things that talk, right? Yeah. The problem is Gordon is a person mm-hmm. amongst people that talk to him, and he simply does not respond, anything. And like, for a game, because I think I'm fine with it, because I don't see Half-Life as a game about characters mm-hmm. or particularly character-driven plot.
It's a game about, like, well, characters, but not the player character.
Yeah.
See, that's what I don't think Half-Life 2 does well, because the characters are simply better, or generally you get good character development based on the interaction with the protagonist. Like, that's how you learn more about the character. There's none of that in Half-Life 2. There's no interaction between the protagonist and the characters.
What's up, Squeaks?
In the original Half-Life, mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of had a closeness to the character, much like in Portal, because after the first area, you were basically on your own, and, you know, little skirmishes here and there, but there was not a lot of interacting with somebody to get the story going. There was a lot of people in there, so, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you're expecting it in Half-Life 2, Half-Life 1 holds up better, because with the silent protagonist, that fit. With this, you feel you should interact with the people around
you. Right, because I didn't play Half-Life 1. I should make that clear. But from what I've read for it, like, you're mostly interacting. Well, by the way, Shinboy630 joins us. Hello, Shinboy. We're talking about Half-Life 2, my first foray into early 2000s.
It's not that early. It's 2004.
Valve games? Mid-2000.
I think it's like one of the very few Valve games I've played.
Earlier in the episode, we did talk about video game music, and I made a note to talk about
Journey.
Journey.
I mean, I have it
for you. For you, I did.
Music.
every time
I'm on the show, that's what's playing in my background.
Nice.
But we're just talking about how I didn't enjoy Half-Life 2 at all, and part of it was because of the plot and how it presents that. In Portal, you have nothing to interact with, and in Half-Life 1, you're mainly like fighting aliens, right? Like, there's no real... The only people are, like, Marines trying to kill you. Like, is there any...
Yeah, like, basically what you're doing in Half-Life 1 is you've accidentally triggered an alien invasion through the magical portals.
The Zen portal, yeah.
Yeah, Zen portals are happening all over the Black Mesa area, and you're trying to escape.
Yeah.
And then once you get on the surface, you find the government is trying to just destroy the area, mm-hmm. with sending in the Marines, sending in nukes, to make it so that all this bad stuff goes away. And so you're fighting both those and you're escaping. Yeah. What little interaction you get is from surviving guards or surviving scientists who are like, oh, you have to do this.
Yeah.
Giving you mission updates.
And this is kind of like that. Like, I met the crew, your crew of friends at the start, and there was that pretty actually legitimately funny sequence where you're teleported around and stuff by accident and you end up outside. But then I started realizing that anytime you are interacting with people, they're just telling you what to do. And that's it. Because you can't interact with them, you can't ask them why, you can't ask them about your mission objectives and about the world itself and why you'd be doing these things. It's just, hey, make your way over here. All right, hey, now you're here, make your way over there. Now go to the next step. Now go to the next step. Now run away. Now, and it's, it fell flat to me. I was like, why? I'm not having fun here. I'm just being a robot and executing commands.
I'm not sure how I can, how the right application of this is, but the reason why I love replaying that game so much is I get to see all the little cookies and gems all over again. Like,
right.
The craziness that is Father Grigori running into Dog all those different times and different levels and different episodes.
So, that kind of stuff is way separate from the main storytelling though. So I don't know if
it's not like the main story, but it's the little stories, like the couple that's always like the guy's always trying to comfort the girl who is just torn apart by all that's happening.
Okay. Let's draw a parallel here. Mm-hmm. To a game that we all have played in Guild Wars 2.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The main story, in a lot of ways, is super disappointing, but there are a ton of little really neat event chains and stuff that have really neat, interesting stories on their own.
True.
It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
So, I can understand why you're, kind of bummed at how simple that main story is and how, the interaction is.
The scary thing is that Portal is literally GLaDOS tells you to do something and then you do it. And I don't know why.
Well, the thing is,
I enjoy that so much more.
No, it's not.
It is at the beginning, but the thing is, because that character's job is to tell you to tell you to do those things, that mm-hmm. is the sole, at least at the beginning, is the purpose of that character.
It's telling you to do that, and then there's that room that you have to come across that you find the rat man, and you're like, wait, this story has just changed.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. There's definitely
unless
you
didn't suspect it ahead of time, something is amiss here.
And yeah, and this in Half-Life 2, you kind of have a purpose in Half-Life, not fucking, in Portal 2, you kind of have a purpose in subverting GLaDOS. Like, that's kind of what you're doing. You know she's out for you, and you're trying to get away. Like, you know what your purpose is. You are making your own decisions, even though you're essentially being forced into situations where you have no choice. You're doing it for a reason from the start. In Half-Life 2, it's just like, you need to kill this dude or whatever and go. Is it and
well, and it feels like it gives it too much up front,
yeah,
to who your objective is. It doesn't let the story blossom on its own, where am I supposed to go? It kind of feels like you're running away from the person you're supposed to go, and then kind of coming back.
The thing I like about that, they do play a lot of the cards ahead of time, but there is so much new to the world of Half-Life that you going through Ravenholm. The zombies, after you've done it one or two times, you sort of know all the scare points. Mm-hmm. It's fun to listen to Grigori go crazy. But the antlion section where you're you could spend anywhere from 5 minutes to a half hour going across this level that if you even touch step on sand, all these antlions pop out and
kill
you.
So that level was lame.
It's lame after you know the tricks of it.
But no, it's lame.
Okay, it's kind of lame.
I don't know, the mission after that where you can control the antlions, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
not lame.
That level is awesome, where you're assaulting a prison.
So,
turned fortress.
I guess it got to the point where I got the suit, and then it became one of the fastest shooters I'd played since Vanquish, because I'm just speeding everywhere. I'm on easy because it defaulted there, and that's how we're playing games nowadays, apparently.
I think that was
because
their early
you're a
attempt.
Care Bear.
I think that was their early attempt in a cover system because
right.
A cover system just didn't exist at that time. So they just thought if you move really quickly, you can like dodge. Pop out of the corner, shoot the guy a couple times, and pop back in.
Exactly. I know. And then, like, running away from the helicopter would just be me speeding through areas, waiting in cover for my speed to recharge, and then speeding through areas again. It's kind of like that. But yeah, it would just get this freaking frenetic shooter where I'd just be, like, speeding dudes, like, pot-shotting dudes with my pistol, getting the assault rifle first time, fucking speeding around dudes and mowing them down and shit and running from objective to objective. So
the pulse rifle was the best weapon in that game.
So it just became
right-click.
Like this weird game in Fast Forward where I was like speed to objective, find out what next objective was, speed to next objective, and repeat. Like it was really, it kind of almost reinforced, it diluted the discovery by giving me speed. Because, for example, in the speedboat sequence, which was insane and one of the worst controlling things I've ever played because the camera just goes crazy.
That was so squirrely. That's also the game industry's first take on interactable vehicles and all that.
Really?
Oh, well, wow. Like,
no, it wasn't.
Not one of their first takes.
Not in a shooter.
Battlefield 1942.
That was them trying to do like a set engine, like the game engine. Okay, we're just going to make these vehicles using the game engine.
Oh, like fully like, within, without being their own thing.
It's we'll throw them together like you can do in Garry's Mod sort of thing.
Right.
And just give it properties. Something made with an editor rather than made from scratch.
So it was just like, I just felt really detached from the whole situation, partially because of the inhuman speed, the weird camera in the speedboat, and hugely because of the plot, but also because of the pacing. Because I'm not sure you guys remember this, but you probably do. Like, I'd be almost at an objective, and then I'd hit a room with a plank on an angle, and it's going a weird way compared to where I need to go, so I have to get these cinder blocks and put them on one side of the plank.
Physics puzzles.
Fucking worst.
Cynic?
Yep.
Could you, if, like, would you be willing to, just because, like, once you get past Ravenholm, I don't know, probably once you get past the antline area. No, not for Cynic, but like you want it, like once you get to Nova Prospect, that's when the game, like, you know, that's when act two to act three starts. Well, not act two.
It's not like the tail end of act two almost.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'd say, yeah, the finale of act two is probably Nova Prospect. Definitely with that portal sequence. But would you be willing to just like have like be able to turn God mode on to just cheese through stuff just to get the story? Because I would love to get your opinion of the ending of it as well. Because
I've heard
what I really want is his opinion of the ending of episode two.
Yeah, but it's I'm not going to buy both those episodes for him.
No, it was an interesting trip into gaming history for me. Like, I really enjoyed playing it.
A lot of people who like play that game now and like are super critical of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, this game came out in 2004.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And I played the whole game with that frame of mind.
Like what Cynic's doing, he's comparing it with BioShock Infinite, game that came out, what?
Well, no, like he's comparing it to Mass Effect as well. And like he's compared all these games that improved upon the designs of...
Because pacing issues are pacing issues. That's not really affected by time.
Yeah.
But I think in some respects it is because this crazy physics in the game that hadn't really been seen before, so they had to do something with it.
Yeah.
It's just what they decided to do with it, maybe where they decided to put those puzzles was not the best.
Hey,
More like the pacing issues, other games have learned from those like those trials.
Right, but yeah, it's like, hey, you have this awesome crowbar that can beat dudes up really well and break everything without being damaged.
But again, these rusted grates of wood, the little splinters.
And there's these rusted grates here, but no, you have to like go down these pipes and start like a buoyancy puzzle with water.
That's not Half-Life 2. That is video games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Waste high walls are your biggest enemy.
It's just interesting to me comparing this with Portal, and I hadn't thought of that comparison before because
I mean, but it's like any, I don't know, because talking about like, yeah, oh, I can't break through these grates, I have to do this buoyancy puzzle. That's every first-person shooter. You go through this puzzle, or you could just be like, I have this rocket launcher, I could just blow this wall down, but the game doesn't let you.
I'm in the happy position, for me at least, that I haven't played too many first-person shooters, so this is actually the first.
Okay, it's like it's pretty much like any game.
But this is actually the first-person shooter I played, which had puzzles in it. I was like, this is...
Like, Guild Wars 2, I have an axe in my hand. Oh, why can't I just chop down every tree?
Fucking first-person platforming. Like, I bought Mirror's Edge recently. I don't know why, but I really love the soundtrack. So I was like, okay, I might as well. I was like $2.50, so whatever. But so I bought that and I might play that next. But yeah, it was just, it was really cool. And I just wanted to share my experience of, as a person who'd never played Half-Life 2 and having played so many games which would be inspired by elements of it and going back to Half-Life 2, because I don't think the game holds up unless you play it on a high difficulty and derive a lot of your pleasure from the challenge, because I bet that's definitely a part of Half-Life 2, because it does control pretty well. Like, it's quite precise.
And you can always play multiplayer Half-Life 2. You can play Synergy.
I'm definitely have to go back.
Oh, God, Synergy.
Such a fucking piece of shit. Fuck that thing.
But yeah, like 100 people.
Running feels good. Speeding feels good. Shooting feels good. Like, it's a solid playing game. I just don't like the story and how it paces.
Well, you don't like the story up to, like, the middle of the first act.
Well, I don't like the way it presents the story, which is why I'm kind of...
You're right in saying that, like, it's a lot of, just go here, do that, until you get sort of to the middle. And also, if you go... This is like a problem that a lot of games have, is that there's a lot of dialogue and storytelling that's not that, but you have to go out of your way to find it. Like, if you go find a lot of the Vortigaunts, they have a lot of really interesting.
Oh, God, I love the Vortigaunts so much.
In some ways, like, really insightful and almost inspirational dialogue, but you have to go out of your way to find it.
And they are a multiple talk sort of thing.
All right.
Cool. Yeah. Anyway, I love the Vortigaunts.
Aside from that, I've finished Uncharted 3. After playing,
that's a video game.
I finished Half-Life 2. I still have the thing in me which I want to play a game to fill the gap of books, because I don't have any books to read, so I need something with good story. And I picked up Uncharted 3, and that didn't give me that. So it was a game.
Actually,
where...
just because this is an opportunity for it, we did talk about it a while ago. Uh-huh. Have you ever played Thomas Was Alone?
No.
That super easy platformer? That's got a really good story.
That's the one where you're like a rectangular block, right? And you're platforming?
Yeah, well, yeah, you are many blocks.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I might pick that up.
When did you guys start this, out of curiosity?
The podcast 2 hours ago. My discussion
was
like...
Oh, God. And we're just at... Oh, I might
That's the show. Like, that's the show. I don't think we're gonna...
We got nothing to talk today.
So,
damn, I want to talk about furries and bronies.
But
on, what games have I been playing, you guys?
Oh, well, I'm just going to complete my thought on Uncharted, then we'll get to you.
Go ahead.
So Uncharted 3 is actually, this is to give you some perspective, because most of the people here play Bioshock Infinite. Uncharted 3 is more impressive in terms of its environments than Bioshock Infinite is. It is spectacular. Like,
in terms of technically speaking,
well, both technically and in some elements, like there's a part where you're going through a broken shipyard.
What wasn't it like?
God, I hate that level.
I remember hearing it might have been for like Uncharted 2, and I can't imagine this. I imagine it's the same for Uncharted 3. But I was listening to old GDC podcasts, and didn't they design the game around the sets? Like, they said, okay, we want to see, like, after watching all like Indiana Jones and whatnot, we want to see a part where like you're like this train crashes and you're having to get through, and then they modeled the story after all these different settings.
I wouldn't be surprised, because that story is a piece of shit. So like it's an interesting game where like the sets I think are amazing. Like Shinboy,
Nolan North makes it work.
Do you disagree? Like, I think some I thought the ship level was
some of them
spectacular.
Are like the I thought the old shipyard was a piece of shit, because that is one of the worst design levels I've ever seen.
That's the other side of it, because the platforming, for some reason, is so fucking bad. Like, Uncharted 2 played really well. And here, like, you never feel like you're fully in control of the platform.
That's what I mean. Like, and that coupled with ships that are moving and rising up and down as you're trying to jump from one to – is just bad times.
Yeah. It's just, what the fuck?
The old ass mansion was pretty awesome.
Yes. The old mansion was freaking
– And then I got to the cruise ship and then I stopped playing because I couldn't take the shit level design anymore.
Yeah, because that was kind of like the weird thing, because Uncharted 2 was about 60% platforming and world building and 40% combat. This was like 40% platforming and world building and 60% combat. And on top of that, the combat never felt really good. People are fucking seriously bullet sponges. Like, there's dudes in armor.
Even on normal.
Yeah, I played on normal because I wanted to go back to normal for at least one game to see if I liked it. And no, I'm going to go back to easy for the next game I played. But it's like these dudes in armor, which can take multiple shot, like full fucking close range shotgun blast to the face to knock off their face mask, and then you have to do it a couple more times to kill them.
Like, yep, I agree. It's really dumb.
Like, what the? Who thought that was fun?
I'm just glad I said I never played this series, I guess, what everyone's saying.
Two is actually legitimately a game I would recommend to anyone.
Yeah, but, yeah, two. I mean, and you can play two in a vacuum. You don't need to play one or three to get the most out of two.
And backpedaling on some of like the emotional developments in two, in three, really pissed me off. Like, where the characters are, where you stand with some of the characters are completely different from the ending of two and starting of three.
Like I said, I only got to the cruise ship. I don't.
Oh, you already met Alina, though. It's like, you know how...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
At the end of 3, you thought that relationship was going different places than it did.
Although Uncharted 2 probably has one of my, like, favorite moments that any game has done with their camera.
Which is...
When you're climbing... This, I mean, it's not really a spoiler, but when you're climbing up in the Tibetan level and there's, like, the black shadow on the side of the screen and then it, like, turns into the mouth
as
you're climbing up.
Dude!
Man, that was really awesome.
It seriously feels like this was done by the B team with supervision by the A team. It's not quite B tier, but
it doesn't
have the magic of two, which makes me interested to see how The Last of Us goes, because they set a standard with Uncharted 2 and they didn't meet it with 3, and apparently
they set a standard with the original Crash Bandicoot. Crash Bash.
So, yeah, I can't wait to see how Last of Us goes, because that could be pretty cool. Hopefully. If it's their 80, if they come back in force and reconvince me that Naughty Dog knows what the fuck they're doing, then I'm there. But we'll see.
That game looked okay at PAX.
I think it's one of the prettiest games this gen, at least from what I've seen. It looks awesome.
The level they were showing... At least the level of PAX, you couldn't really see that. It was a lot of tight indoor stuff.
Right. Anyway.
But it still looks good.
Shimboy630, welcome to the show. How are you doing? What have you been up to this week?
Oh, what have I been up to this week?
Because this is the show. Like, we're just asking what everyone's been up to, and that's it. Like, we don't have anything else to say.
are we not going to talk about furries?
No.
I'm trying to think.
Oh, damn.
I continued a little bit of my quest to finish Kingdom Hearts 2. I stopped at a certain point before a certain level that I wanted everyone to see.
Wait, you had a quest to play Kingdom Hearts 2?
Yeah, well, like, I started playing Kingdom Hearts 2, like, not too long, well, actually a long time ago, on an emulator. And then within the past few months, I had been streaming it as I've been playing it.
Okay.
And then I was like, you know what? I feel like playing Kingdom Hearts 2, but I don't feel like streaming it. And I knew it was like a boring ass part of the game. It's like one of the levels. It's like a half hour with like one combat scenario. Great. So it's not very interesting to watch because Kingdom Hearts story is convoluted as all hell.
Okay.
So I got through that part. And right before one of the best level transitions in the game, and I don't want to ruin it, but some people might know what I'm talking about. Revan will know what I'm talking about.
Because
he loves Kingdom Hearts way too much.
Damn, Revan.
So I'm saving that, and I'll probably do that over the next few days. Cool. What else have I been playing? Playing a lot of Guild Wars for some reason.
You played Dota with us. We talked about that.
Oh, yeah, we talked about
it. So that was fun. So is this your first week of Dota as well, or?
I mean, I had played Dota before.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had like 7 hours or something before.
Were you a Dota All-Stars veteran like me? Or?
No, not at all. No.
What's your stance?
My friend that
we never had a chance to talk about this, but... How mad were you with me just running around as the assassin that second match? Like that mid game where I just kept sneaking up and ganking people.
I don't think you ever killed me in the
match. Oh, I know I did. I stuck up on you one or twice.
Not more so than anyone else.
Okay.
Nice. So, well, what kind of ratios are you guys getting at your current skill level?
In the second game, I went like 5, 10, and 12 or something for kills, deaths, and assists.
Not bad.
More or less equal or positive. It's hard to tell because once you get into late game, there's always that one champion that just slaughters everyone.
Oh, when we had Spectre carry us at the end.
Nice.
That was the best.
We've strayed. Yeah,
and then we went all. What the hell hero was that? The elf chick on the cat.
We're all y'all were the same character.
Yeah. Well, we were all the same hero, and we played for over an hour with all 10 of us the same hero.
That sounds crazy. Priestess of the Moon?
No, it's like, it was one name with like
Melandra. Was that it?
No, it started
that,
with an
that's
it
what the like, that's what the original Warcraft 3
Marina, Mirana, something like that.
Sure,
Marinara.
yeah, that sounds good.
Pasta.
Yeah,
it's the pasta character.
You take two.
Yeah. Yeah, so like the one of the first skills you can unlock is like a stun arrow that has like crazy long range. So we're basically all just chucking them at each other at mid and like by the river and just seeing who could stun each other. And then this went on for an hour.
So are you on board with Dota? Is this now a thing?
No, no.
Okay.
Because like
I was going to say, I'm going to, if this becomes the Dota cast, I'm leaving. Like, I'm out. Because fuck
no,
you guys.
No, not at all. yeah, I don't, besides like Guild Wars 2, I haven't really been playing much. I played like an hour of Deus Ex Human Revolution the other day.
I've
that game's
to
still
go
pretty
back
good.
To the game. I want, I've so
I would agree that the game, with the exception of the boss fights, is pretty good.
I did the first boss fight on easy because I didn't care. Because I knew it was going to be bad.
I stopped after the second boss fight, which is the chick in the server room, right?
I don't know. I'm not at that point yet.
So, but you just beat the big dude with the machine gun, right?
Yeah, and I'm just like thinking to myself afterwards, you expect me to take a helicopter from Detroit to China? Like a helicopter?
Well, it's like the future.
It's like
it's a
helicopter
future
jet, man. It's like a helicopter jet. It looks badass.
No, they call it a helicopter. It's a helicopter.
But what if there's a bomb on the helicopter?
Is that a reference I'm not getting?
That's a reference to Deus Ex, the original.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
You find a bomb in there. Well, it's look up on the YouTube. But you find a bomb, on the YouTubes, and the guy, the voice actor for JC Denton, the guy you're playing as, changes his voice by like two octaves down, and it goes like, "Oh my god, JC, a bomb!"
That sounds amazing.
It's pretty dumb.
I just remembered. Am I crazy, or is Half-Life 2 like really linear at the start?
It's well, and actually, I feel like I should mention this. It's really pretty linear throughout the entire thing. I'm not sure if my like nostalgia of its amazing AI was just really good scripting and placement of like headcrabs, like always like hiding in a corner behind you, so you wouldn't notice it when you first walk through, and they would just by their
very a lot of them are hiding like inside crates or behind crates and stuff.
Yeah, and so they just jump behind you because you wouldn't think to look there. And, oh god, this is really good AI. It's scary, but it might just be really good scripting.
But it's ultra linear, right? Because the crazy
yeah, it
thing,
is pretty yeah. much the whole way through.
It's pretty linear.
Because I think
it's not like open world zones that are loosely linear.
But like the AI is decent enough that it makes it like the game mixes itself up a decent amount.
Yeah, they will like shoot you once, then back up and go to another area to shoot you.
Yeah,
so it is nice in that way.
But just to say, like Uncharted 3's AI fucking, aside from the fact that they're bullet sponges, is actually pretty good. Like that they surround you, and actually I felt overwhelmed in multiple instances in Uncharted 3, which is a
then
bad
you just
thing.
Melee your way out of it.
Yeah,
exactly. I guess that's the one thing I like about Half-Life, and I really hope other games do this in the future. There were no, like, apart from the antlion boss, there were no bullet sponges.
Right, and I hate bullet sponges. I fucking hate bullet
sponges.
It's such an artificial way to increase difficulty.
Just have, like, certain guys one-shot you, and that's the danger.
But I don't like that either. Like, I like a midpoint between hard and a bullet sponge, and also a midpoint between you dying in two shots and you, like, normal.
Okay, I think actually this is something that BioShock did well. Like with the carbine, you shoot a dude solid like three times and he's pretty much throughout the whole
no
course of the game.
No matter what difficulty. Like I chucked it onto hard and it was the same. Two shots, dead. If it's headshots. And I love that. That was legitimately cool. I just didn't like how easy you go down in hard. And freaking Squeaks,
I mean, it is
1999. Fucking crazy, man.
Yeah,
I might
love
play
with that Squiddle. You'll have to keep us updated.
I might play through it to try and get that achievement as well.
Yeah, I actually did the one. What's the achievement where you got to shoot the guy, the handyman in the heart?
Handyman in
the heart. I actually did that one on 1999. It took me 2 hours to get it down correct. So, it's an experience.
On the subject of really, okay, what is your guys' really favorite dumb, not necessarily boss, but boss type bad guy achievement? Like the Squiddles, I don't know if you are making claim to this, but the one you got of 1999 handyman heart only shots. Mine would be the tank from Left 4 Dead 2 when you have to train him onto in the circus level to hit the ground pound bell goes up at the like at the circus.
Oh yes,
yeah. Like that was pretty good. How would you describe that like fair
thing? Oh, the thing where you like you have to hit the hammer on the thing at the bottom to see how strong you are.
Yeah, the strong arm test. Yeah. You get the giant tank to punch you when you're standing on it, and he breaks the thing because he hits it so hard. That is,
I don't know. On top of my head, getting killed by Jormag is pretty funny.
That is really good.
Getting him to land on you is pretty funny.
That is actually pretty cool. Yeah.
Cynic noob.
I nearly just fell asleep on my chair.
I'll let you collect your thoughts while Cynic tells us what his favorite.
Wait. So I'm just gonna say mine, and then I guess I'm gonna hop off.
Okay.
I'm really
sure.
Tired.
Okay.
I don't like not enjoying video games, so I hate going to bosses and dying. That's what my thing is.
That's it. You don't there like you boss fights. Well, is that
yeah, well like said.
Nice.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of boss fights either.
There are some boss fights that are done really well.
It depends on the genre, really. Like, yes. I don't need boss fights in my first person shooter.
Like, yeah, I agree to that. My favorite boss fight would probably have to be the Great Mighty Pooh, but that's Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Oh, it's hard because my favorite boss fight ever is the end from Metal Gear Solid 3, which is you running around multiple areas in a sniper.
Is that the
battle.
Really old guy?
Yeah, the sniper battle. Which he can cheese in so many ways. Like, he can enter that boss fight, save the game, exit the game, come back 3 days later, and then come back into the game, and he's died of old age. You can kill him.
Kojima.
You can kill him at the start of the game. Like, when you first see him, he's in a wheelchair, and then you just don't have to do that boss fight, and you just get the items he drops. You can... Let's see, what else is that? You can go in night vision mode and just sneak up on him and melee him, even though he's a sniper. Or you can just play as like a hard, pretty badass extended sniper sequence of you two dudes sniping each other from like long range and shit. It's actually the coolest boss battle is, but that was before the days of achievements. So I'd say
same with the Conquerors.
Yeah, like the closest thing I had to a cool achievement involving boss fights, because again I'm not a huge fan of boss fights, is in Dark Souls. If for all the dragon bosses, if you cut off their tails, you get achievement. So you have to do every single one, and it's varying difficulties.
Yeah, it's gotta be pretty epic.
Yeah, because dragons, some of them are actually pretty hard, some of them are easy, but you have to, instead of focusing on surviving and killing them, you have to focus on a specific part of their body part, which usually hits you back, because a tail swipe is one of the attacks, and slowly take that off, and then get the item. So I missed on it by one item, because I got its tail off. It dropped the item that you get from cutting off any dragon's tail. And then he killed me. And so when I respawned, the item was gone. I didn't get the achievement. But it was fun to get. Like, I know in my heart that I...
You had it at one point in time. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Because not a lot of my favorite boss fights like had achievements because of when the game came out.
Yeah. So I think there is place for boss fights. It's just how you do it. Because
in certain genres, in RPGs and character action games and stuff, definitely need like big, crazy boss fights.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, when you're talking about boss fights, in Hitman Absolution, there's many different ways to accomplish your goal when it comes to an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
So in a game that gives you a boss, quote unquote, fight, to do, if they give you multiple ways to do it, I'm okay with that, instead of just it's you one-on-one with this guy, he has a rocket launcher and you have a pistol and you have to kill him in some form or fashion. If there's multiple ways to do it, like if you're sneaking around, if you drop a chandelier on someone's head and then boom, that's you're done, you killed the guy.
That's pretty cool.
I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
See, my favorite achievement is one that I'm never going to do, which is the one in episode 2 and halfway to episode 2 with the gnome. We need to bring him through.
Oh, no, that's Left 4 Dead 2, but yeah.
No, it's not.
The gnome's in episode 2 as well?
The Left 4 Dead 2 thing is a reference to episode 2.
Oh, no, I'm going to get to play that then.
The gnome is like right at the beginning of episode 2, and you need to bring it with you through the entire game and place it somewhere at the end of episode 2 that, for Cynic's purposes, I'm not going to say what it is.
That's cute.
But the thing is...
Oh, I know where you put
it. If you don't put it in there and you bring it with you after that point, which is right at the end of the game, you don't get the achievement, even though you brought it with you for the entire game.
Aww.
It's amazing. Like, I saw a screenshot the other day of someone standing there like at the very end of the game with the gnome just saying like, oh shit, I realize I forgot to put it where I was supposed to.
But that totally reminds me. So like when you were talking about Deus Ex Human Revolution, I played a bunch of the original Deus Ex before the terrible shooting put me off. And I actually really love Deus Ex Human Revolution. Did Deus Ex 1 predate Half-Life 2? It had to, right? Because the graphics are way worse.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, so... Yes, yeah.
By a lot.
It's crazy when people harken back to early PC gaming and just like labyrinthine level designs and being able to approach things from multiple directions. That was totally what I was expecting in Half-Life 2. But I'm happy that we're kind of returning to that with not necessarily Bioshock, even though that does have like a good deal of the area you can explore without necessarily having to complete your objective. Like, it's just there to experience. But Deus Ex Human Revolution is a great example of a game that came out recently that actually does that. I felt like I could achieve.
And even though it was a pile of trash, Dishonored did the same thing.
Whoa, you didn't like Dishonored? Isn't that like...
No, we've had this conversation on this podcast
have
before.
Have we? Okay.
Yeah.
But you did say you are looking forward possibly to the DLC.
Yeah, that right? DLC looks super interesting.
Oh god, that Far Cry 3 DLC makes me want to buy Far Cry 3.
And I didn't. That makes no sense in the entire world. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense.
I'm pretty sure it's standalone.
Isn't it DLC? I think it's DLC, dude.
It was standalone. Hold on, let me look this up. I'm turning off my mic to go look this up.
So people don't know what we're talking about. Far Cry 3, I think Giant Bomb's Game of the Year 2012? Did that happen? That happened, right? Oh, no.
It's definitely one of the top three.
XCOM.
It was like top
three. It was XCOM.
It was XCOM 1.
It was like top
3. Yeah, it was top 3.
But yeah, it's essentially an open world game where you shoot dudes, and apparently one of the characters is good. But aside from that, they're now doing a DLC pending Jim Boy's checking. Which is literally like a total conversion.
It's $14, so I'm gonna assume it is.
It's either DLC or just a standalone. It uses that same technology.
Three
just
Blood Dragon is a standalone expansion of Far Cry.
Oh yeah,
buying the shit out of that.
I know, me too.
That's
why it doesn't make any sense.
It's a total conversion. Okay. It's a freaking 80s cartoon / action hero bullshit.
Set in a dystopian 2007, Ubisoft describes the game as an 80s VHS vision of the future where you must get the girl, kill the baddies, and save the world.
Oh, it looks so great. It looks so great.
So what you're saying is you're doing like a Saints Row type take on Far Cry 3 where everything is just absolutely batshit crazy?
Yeah, and they go as crazy with it. Like, they change the UI to make it all freaking like Tron-esque and stuff. It looks awesome.
It's basically the 80s view of what 2007 would be.
So the guy in this trailer just shot someone with a rocket and with his animatronic hand flicks him off after he shoots him.
You apparently can flip off people whenever you want. That's just like a button.
Oh, I'm sold. Yeah, if it's standalone, I'm there. 100% there. This looks cool. Is that all Shinbo
and
Yossi have been doing?
For Skype chat for everyone, that's like the poster for it.
Anything outside
I played a lot
of
Guild Wars 2.
So,
I'm trying to think.
We had a discussion point in Guild Wars 2 if you want to jump on that. But
what was it?
So Thurbleton and Squiggs were commenting on the current standing of the...
Basically, the guild missions that we have unlocked so far.
Yeah. And their general...
Guild bounties and guild treks. So guild treks gives you more time, and we get done in less, and it's super easy, and guild bounties are just terrible.
No, guild bounties are great, just you have bad luck.
That's also true.
I got a moment before it came on here, and I was like, do you guys do bounties? And they were all just like, yo, you need to be on here. You're a good luck charm. Thurb is bad luck.
Because
I went to go see Jurassic Park IMAX 3D. That's why I was
here. How was that? Did they do a good job?
You told me you were working.
No?
Oh, last week you were.
Yeah. Jurassic Park IMAX 3D was awesome. You should all go see it. It holds up really well.
That's
like,
good.
Really, really well.
That is
aside from like a few effects like the helicopter at the beginning and then the egregiously horrible 90s fashion, if you didn't know any better, you would think that that was a relatively new movie.
That's
sweet.
Cool.
Did you have any jump scares because of the 3D? Like, it actually caught you off? Or were you ready?
No. There was actually a few really cool moments with the 3D. Like, in the whole raptors in the kitchen scene. There's one part where the raptor is really close to the camera and like the children are like far away and further out. And the way as the raptor turns, how it's sort of in the foreground looks really awesome.
Awesome. Cool. So it's worth going to and watch in 3D?
Oh, totally.
Specifically in IMAX, or do you think it would work on a normal screen as well?
It might. IMAX definitely helped. Mm-hmm. But I realized while I was there that one thing I don't like about Jurassic Park, just in general, is that it does one thing that I hate when movies do it, is complete overuse of its theme. It's like, right, you hear that Jurassic Park theme music like a dozen times. I hate it. But other than that, Jurassic Park.
Which I think that's a good full circle on the earlier discussion of just like video game music and how to properly pace it and when to not have it just completely over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Do we want to do plugs and wrap up, guys?
Yeah, we should probably wrap up, right?
Yeah, I know. I've been on this show forever. I can't stand it anymore.
any discussion points? Does anyone have any news we want to talk about? Because I don't see anything remotely interesting this week at all. Let's have a look. Aside from Blood Dragon, but
I'm trying to think if I did anything even non-game related that was relatively interesting.
Just watch the Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon DLC trailers on YouTube and wherever else you get your information. It looks awesome.
Giantbomb.com.
Giantbomb.com.
Yeah.
It's a website. It's a website. Video games. Nice. Yeah. We all pay way too much attention to that site, but we are doing a podcast for the community there, so yeah, I guess that makes sense. In with that, Thurbleton, do you have anything to plug?
I will do New Brahma's plug for the PC Gaming Hub, I guess, but
you know, that's like the one plug that we've never failed to put in our show notes, aside from the ones where I just haven't done show notes.
Well, see, here's something that it's a double-edged sword for New Brahma, but him and the Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub have made a compilation video of their antics, if you can call them that, or their terrorisms of them playing Garry's Mod.
I don't think it's very watchable like for people who don't understand what's going on, because I was like, what is happening?
I tried watching the first 3 seconds of 5 minutes, and No.
I played Gmod at PAX on one of the servers they had up there, and the server crashed because there was too much crazy shit going on.
Nice. You can do a lot of crazy shit in Garry's Mod. Zay Frank, I guess, would be my plug for this week. He's a YouTube guy.
What?
YouTube.com/ZayFrank.
Okay. You have to send me that.
It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, show notes.
Yeah. Squigs, anything to plug?
As the legend passes, so does the Black Sparrow of Time. What? Follow him, and the lyrical goddess will follow.
Yes. Oh, that is my favorite quote.
What the fuck is happening?
Okay. We had a karaoke night thread on the Guild Wars 2 forums on Dry Bomb.
Yep.
And I was like, yo, if you people have suggestions, throw them in this thread. So Squiddle threw down a whole bunch of song suggestions and just put that at the top.
Uh-huh.
I don't, like, just as a random quote. It's not, it's just something he came up with. It's not actually a real quote.
To be honest, I was really drunk when I did that and I was like, this sounds very poetic. It sounded pretty cool.
It sounded legitimately cool. If you said that was from a fantasy novel, I would believe you. Because sure.
I guess, yeah, fantasy on the subject of the Giant Bomb forums, just a reminder, every now and then, last week, I keep transferring people from who picked up the game again from who were in CBSI or How I Met Your Mesmer is the full name of it.
It's such a better name than Lincoln Force. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I really like it. It is.
Whatever.
But putting them in the Lincoln Force proper. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get back into it or if you want to get in the guild and join in on some of the just shenanigans we do, tinyurl.com/thelincolncast will get you to our forums and you can read up about that.
Whoa, I didn't.
Or submit songs for Shinboy's karaoke night.
Cool. I think we might be doing one tonight depending on what kind of mood I'm in.
Sweet.
Sure. I'll take Squiggs's plug as a plug for karaoke night, so I'll put that in the show notes. Shinboy.
Oh, God. On my site, plugandplaygaming.com, I wrote a BioShock Infinite review.
Ooh.
So you should go read that.
I already plugged that last week. Next.
Oh, I wasn't here. And then twitch.tv/shinboy630 if you want to see me play through Kingdom Hearts at some point eventually.
Oh, God.
At least what's left of it. And then I think I'm going to do both Dead Space 1 and 2, like with the lights off in here, because I don't like scary things.
Durin that would be scary. Bitched out on that, so sure.
If he bitched out, that means I have to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to show him up.
Well, to be fair, Twitch lost his archives, but that's because he didn't finish it fast enough. So fuck it.
What a bum.
So in the spirit of noob, should we plug the Facebook page?
No.
Nope.
No.
We'll plug the MySpace page.
What are you talking about?
Okay.
You should follow us on Twitter at the LinkedIncast.
Or message us at the LinkedIncast on Gmail if you ever feel like it. So with that, thank you for listening to this week's off-topic show without news because there's nothing to talk about. Do anyone have a bad joke to round out the show? Doubleton, Shinboy, anyone got some?
I think the ones with bad jokes that Shinboy can always provide.
I'm trying to think of one that I haven't said on this show before.
You can do an old favorite. I don't really give a shit. I just don't know how to end the podcast.
How do we know what Princess Diana's favorite shampoo was?
This is terrible. I don't know.
I don't know. What is
her head and shoulders were all over the dashboard.
Oh! Fuck! Thanks for listening. I need to stop now.